Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Are we really going to make everything all right?
Pardon me, but I had to do that.
Those of you who are keeping score may know that May, along with being Celiac Awareness Month, apparently every Saturday night it's going to be Technical Problems Month.
Yes. And they get more interesting every week.
They do.
Yeah.
Hopefully it won't affect anything you're listening to, but...
Other than my nervous breakdown.
Yeah, well, there's that.
Yes.
But now how am I going to know?
I know. I'm here for you.
Okay.
The interesting thing is, this is a technical issue I've never dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to put up our pictures from our drive into work, and things just got hung up in my phone. And now I've started my phone a couple of times, and I don't want my phone to be broken. Please, please. That's me. I'm talking to the universe. Please, please. Am I whimpering?
Hi, kids.
Hi.
Hi, Ron.
Hi.
Hi, Ron.
Hi, Jeff.
Good evening.
Oh. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Bob's been on this side of the glass.
Yeah, I'm a silent observer today.
You watched us kind of a meltdown a few minutes ago because I'm looking at the clock and the phone's trying to send me codes and I'm thinking, but my phone's not working. Why are you trying to send me a phone code?
And again, without going into specifics, literally, during the theme, there were some things going on behind the scenes that...
Yes. And you know what? These were my best pictures ever. So...
Well, of course.
When I get my phone working, I will post those pictures. Because these pictures have taken on a life, you know. People who... Especially those people who... have left the area and they still feel Chicago is home. They enjoy seeing pictures of home, these fabulous pictures of home.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, I know you mentioned it, but you didn't say anything about fireworks on the South Side tonight. Ron?
I mentioned it? Oh, no, I didn't know about the fireworks on the South
Side
tonight.
The Sox won!
Oh, those fireworks.
Those fireworks, yes.
That's right. They've got that cute little exploding scoreboard, don't they?
Yes, they do. It's a cutie.
Yeah, they won. They played very, very well, 6-1. So
It's been fun.
They're a much better team this year. Much better. Not just improved. They're a much better team.
Yes. I am so enjoying watching this. Obviously, I'm a Sox fan, but I'm so enjoying watching them because even the games that they lose, they're in it right to the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen the previous years.
Yeah, they were overmatched. They just did not have good teams. You know, God bless them. They, you know, they tried. But, you know, what do they always say in the South? God bless their hearts.
Oh, bless their hearts.
Bless their hearts. Yes. Yeah, so.
I'm sorry about the Cubs, because didn't they have a record going?
Wasn't it nine or 10 games, or what was it?
They had won 10 games in a row. They're doing okay. They did not win 11 games in a row. That's no reason to cry. There's no crying in baseball. They can start another streak tomorrow. It was a good streak. They did threaten early in the game. They had the bases loaded. They just couldn't get the right hit at the right time. Today, they just fell a little bit short.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this year, the City Series is going to be wonderful.
Wow.
It's coming up, too.
Because both teams, whatever side you're on, both teams are in a really good place this year. And it's going to be fun games.
So who wants to put some money on this?
Not me.
You know, we could put chocolate coins. How's that?
I bet Ernie Scanton.
Oh, did you?
Last season. The Cubs had not lost to the White Sox in 2 years. They had Shota Imanaga pitching. I said jokingly to Ernie, "Do you want to bet on the game?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Okay, what a good sport you are." But we're not going to bet money. If the Cubs win, which they should, you're going to have to sing Go Cubs Go in the middle of the newsroom. And he said, "Okay, if the Sox win, you're going to have to sing the Sox fight song in the middle of the newsroom." I said, "Yeah, okay." I agreed to that very quickly, shook hands. They creamed Shota Imanaga. And it's the only game they've won in the last 2 years. So I'm not betting on any of the Sox games and the Cubs games. I'm just going to, with Ernie or anybody else, I'm just going to, I've learned my lesson.
And for anybody who doesn't know, Ernie is our production czar. Here at
and a White Sox fan.
And a big White Sox fan.
Yeah.
Yes. A big White Sox fan.
One of many reasons that
we
I
love
like
Ernie. Yes.
Oh, he's a great guy. He's a captain of the softball team. Everybody who's met Ernie likes Ernie. So he's a good guy.
And when it comes to the softball team, he's serious.
Oh, he's very, very competitive.
He ain't playing.
He will bench you. He asked me one time. He said, "Ron, have you always been this slow?" And I said, "No, I used to be slower, Ernie." But it's his way of saying, if you're not running in the outfield, you might be sitting on the bench. And
that's so
just
good.
The way it is. That's just the way it is. He's competitive, and everybody knows it, and everybody accepts it. I was not offended.
I just love that. Have you always been like this?
Yeah, always been this slow. I think he was talking about my speed, not my mental capabilities. But
I thought so, too.
But the jury is still out.
I didn't check. Maybe I should go back and check. Well, you remember that time, Ernie?
Speaking of other people from the radio station, a little later tonight, most everybody knows Bob Kessler from the WGN newsroom. But a little later tonight, Bob is going to join us and show another side of his resume, harmonica player. He's a great harmonica player. He has a brand new album just out called Frequency, and he's going to share some of the songs from the album. So that's one of the things we have coming up tonight.
How cool.
Do you call our harmonica player a harmonica? It's hard to say harmonica player or harmonicaist.
I believe it's harmonicist.
Harmonicist?
Harmonicist?
Yeah.
Really?
I've never heard
the harmonicist.
Or mouth harpist. that's what I meant to say.
Harmonist,
right? Harmonicist?
And I want to find out, too, because he also is doing something called the Harmonicist Podcast.
Oh, you know what?
He interviews people who are great harmonica players.
He'll be here in an hour. We'll find out. Okay, we'll get the lowdown. He's probably driving in now going, I put up with them for so many years, and now I'm walking right back into that.
Because I was just realizing it was literally decades ago when we brought Bob into the WGN radio family, that was as our producer literally decades ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He was one of our first radio kids.
Yep. Yeah.
Did you see that video that he had on Micah Piff put on the WGN Facebook page?
The behind the scenes?
The behind the scenes? With the reel to reel.
Yeah.
It was so good. It was so good.
Well, that's like radio porn for Steve, because he sees a reel to reel player and he's like, oh, that's so good. Oh, I love it. Oh, I need
one of
those.
And then when he's showing splicing, I'm thinking,
you could talk about it for 10, 15 minutes. You know, it's fine. Someone goes get a cup of coffee. They come back. He's still talking about the reel-to-reel. That's just—it's a passion, and it's very fun to see, and it's very interesting to hear. I think.
Well, and it's a lost art. He's talking about something that just isn't done anymore.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. In fact, Bob, our engineer, is in studio with us. Does anybody in this building use a reel-to-reel player with a block with a razor blade to do editing?
No, not.
Just don't have to.
Other than we still have them for dubbing something to a digital format, don't we?
We have it, yeah. It's part of our legacy rack.
Mm-hmm. I bet during the week you could only find three people in the building that could identify a reel-to-reel machine.
What is that?
You may be right.
Yeah.
I wonder where we store our gramophone is what I'm wondering. That's got to be around somewhere.
One?
Yeah, you crank it up. And
probably out at the AM.
Probably,
For the record, this is what I was trying to say earlier.
What? Harmonicist?
I have never, ever...
That's the appropriate real word.
I was this days old when I heard that.
Yes.
I have never, ever heard that. And you're believing AI.
This is YouTube.
You're believing YouTube.
I believe YouTube more than AI. I'm finding... I looked up something the other day. It was a recipe, and I laughed out loud because it happened before. You'd think I would learn, but it had craziness. If I had made the recipe the way ChatGPT told me to make it, it would have been offensive to people.
Speaking of recipes, we should mention tonight.
Yes.
You have a really cool whole dinner recipe that you're going to be sharing a little later. Also, speaking of this being Celiac Awareness Month, and a little bit we're going to be talking with Chris Rich. He's the executive director of the National Celiac Association. Also, a little later tonight, Patrick Crispin will join us. And, oh, boy, do we have a ton of things to talk to Patrick about, including that horrible convoy hack.
No, not, it's Canvas.
Canvas.
Yes. And it looks like...
I know it was one of those C words.
The U of I have announced that they will have their finals on Sunday afternoon. As we were driving in, I said to Steve, boy, that really stinks. Your life is hinged on the success of the finals that you're taking. And it's Mother's Day. So now you've got the stress of your mother going, what? You won't be here?
Well, the first word I had about this, and I shared it with you, it was, what was it, Thursday
afternoon.
And I got a text from Patrick, and he was sending me the information about this hack that he said impacted about 9,000 schools that use this system and just in time for their finals.
Yeah, and spring break and all that other good stuff.
Well, we better take a break. We have a ton of things coming up tonight, some surprises for you later in the show. Also, later in the show, I will tease you with this. We'll let you hear a little bit of the brand new record by the Rolling Stones.
Rolling Stones, yeah.
The brand new record by Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr.
So good.
So we got a lot of things coming up, so stay with us at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
Did you know that Sunday is the biggest and busiest day in restaurants from coast to coast?
I'm pretty sure I did know that, and I was trying to think of what the second day is. But, Mother's Day, historically.
Yeah. So I would just like to suggest that... Let mom have some say-so about where you're going to eat.
Yeah.
A friend of mine posted.
And tip your wait person.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yes, yes. Your wait staff. A friend of mine posted that her kids called her and said, so, we want to take you out for Mother's Day. We'll be over at 7. And they're like, well, why are we going out? You mean 7 in the evening? No, 7 in the morning. We've got things to do later in the day. Wow. Yeah.
So let's go out to dinner at 7 in the morning?
No, they're going to breakfast. And she said, okay, yeah, probably won't be quite as busy, and I don't have to worry about getting all dressed up, and I can go to church after breakfast. But, yeah, she's got 4 kids, and they decided that they would all get together at the crack of dawn to go out for Mother's Day.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, Bob, are you doing anything? Are you working on Mother's Day?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She's not your mother anyway,
well,
right?
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Yes. That's what my dad always said.
She's the mother of my children.
Yes. My dad would look at me and say, well, she's not my mother. Come on. Meaning, use your money to buy the gift. Don't look to me for the money to buy the gift. I think probably Valentine's Day would be right behind Mother's Day, the most popular restaurant.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Somewhere, I'm sure somebody has a list with all these. Okay, Jeff. And the spotlight turns to Jeff.
According to Patronics, they've tallied this out. Mother's Day is number one, and I spent 15 years working in restaurants, and I can attest to that. Mm-hmm. The busiest day. Number two is Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Three is close. It's Father's Day and New Year's Eve. They're close that it could go one way or the other way every year, depending on how good the dads are, I guess.
I'm happy for dads.
Yeah, good.
Because you typically think of dads, they are going to grill their own meal.
Yeah.
So let's get dad some new grilling tools, and let's get him a pack of charcoal.
And a lot of dads are fine with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And Spike Odell is one of them.
That's true. Absolutely. But I'm thinking, so New Year's Eve...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but working as a waiter for some time, would you agree? Because my experience, and again, this was 100 years ago, people just didn't tip well on holidays like Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Because they're not, I would give them an excuse they're not accustomed to going out to eat, which is a really lame excuse, but it made me feel better.
Or, as Johnny and I both experienced in different ways, working New Year's Eve, when she would work New Year's Eve as a waitress and when I would be working New Year's Eve with a band, people would assume, well, I paid this exorbitant fee, so I don't need to tip anybody.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, yeah. Don't go there. Be better, right? Okay, coming up, and on the subject, you had mentioned I've got a recipe coming up tonight. It's ribs. So if you want to talk some good eating, I'm going to share.
I have never had, and I'm not saying this just because it's me and Johnny, but these are the best ribs I've ever had in my
Before
life.
Before we break for news,
falling off the bone.
Do you eat barbecue ribs?
Yes.
You do. Okay, Ron, do you eat barbecue ribs?
Absolutely.
All right, I'm bringing in these ribs next week.
Fantastic.
Jeff?
Jeff's not here. 2 weeks.
You're in luck. I don't eat meat. So
you don't eat meat? Okay. So then we'll do it next week when he's not here. How's that?
Okay.
All right. More for us, That's right? News is next here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. And Daddy, we're gluten-free.
Yes, we are. In the month of May, which is Celiac Awareness Month, and on our show in the month of May, for the five Saturday nights. Each Saturday night, we're spending a few minutes and sharing with you some information from the celiac community, from the gluten-free community. And each Saturday night, I will be sharing a gluten-free recipe with you, something that's going to make your life a little bit easier if you've just been diagnosed and you've decided you have to go gluten-free and you're overwhelmed and you're frightened and you're confused. Hopefully
don't
I can
be frightened, don't be confused.
Yeah. Hopefully I can help you with the recipes and we can help you with some information because there's a lot of good information out there about celiac. And right now we want to introduce you to a gentleman who is the CEO and executive director for the National Celiac Association. Chris Rich joins us right now. And how are you tonight, Chris?
I'm doing well. Hello. Thank you both for having me this evening. Happy Celiac Awareness Month.
Yeah. It's our month, and we get five Saturdays this year.
Yeah,
and
you know, I was tapping my toes along to the song there.
Yeah. Isn't that a great song? And you know, I'm so glad that you said Happy Celiac Awareness Month because, Chris, one of the things that has always kind of flummoxed me since I was diagnosed back in 2001, people say, oh, I'm so sorry. No, you should be happy. I know what the problem is. I know what to avoid. I feel better. So being diagnosed with celiac disease is not a bad thing. It's a good thing that makes you feel better.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And we try to convey that to a lot of people who reach out to us. You're right. People, they say, this is, oh, no, I can't do this. I can't do this. But there are certain things, you know, if you educate yourself, there are ways that you can continue to thrive. Mm-hmm. And that's what really what we want people to do is to continue to thrive in their life. And don't let this be something that is a setback. Let this be something that takes you down a different path, but keep living your life.
Absolutely. And so often over the past 25 years, Chris, I've watched Steve say to people, look, I don't have the big C, I got the little C. So I'm okay, mm-hmm. Really. I know what I'm dealing with.
And oddly enough, when I was first diagnosed, I was losing 12 pounds a week. They thought I had cancer. I got lucky. I got a European doctor who said, have you ever been tested for celiac sprue? And I said, I never heard of it. Ran the test, came back positive, changed my diet, changed my life.
And so, Chris, what is your story? How did you get involved with the celiac community?
So very similar to what Steve just said. So I do what I do because my son was diagnosed 13 years ago. But it was the same thing. We were on vacation. He started to get stomach aches. We didn't know what to do. We actually fed him a piece of toast. Well, that's, you know, bad pairing of the year at that point in time. But it took many months and many visits to pediatricians who could not diagnose him. And we were on a plane. And my wife was talking to someone next to her, and they said, have you had him tested for celiac disease?
Oh.
That is what got us on that road. And it really did open up my eyes and say, you know, why don't people know about this? And I'm as guilty as the next guy. Before he was diagnosed, I would go through the grocery store. I'd see gluten-free on the shelf. I'd say, oh, another fad diet. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
But until it really does affect you, you don't know that. That is the only medical treatment for somebody with celiac disease. And the amount of information, and I think that's one of the things that's changed in the past decade at least, is that there are being more people now diagnosed properly.
Mm-hmm.
And all it takes is a blood test to test for your antibodies, but that was never really given at the point. And you still have to ask for it, which is where I think we still need to make some strides.
Yeah.
But it's great to know that some doctors now are not just saying, you have IBS, or mm-hmm. maybe you just need to take a probiotic. There's a little bit more knowledge out there, which is allowing more people to be properly diagnosed.
Chris, I'm curious. I agree with you. It's great that there are more doctors who are willing to do this, but Johnny and I have heard from so many parents who say, you know, our doctor doesn't want to test for celiac disease.
Mm-hmm.
And our immediate response is, get another doctor.
Yeah, or go to a specialist, a gastroenterologist, mm-hmm. or somebody of that nature. I know doctors, you know, there are some doctors who understand. There are other doctors who don't want to do a multitude of tests because there are some tests still not covered by certain insurance companies, et cetera. So they're trying to be mindful for their patient. But if there's something wrong with your kid or with yourself, you know, you want to find that answer more so than you're thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so there are specialists out there. We had to go to a gastroenterologist for my son. And that was where we were able to get the answers that we were looking for.
To give people an idea of what the symptoms of celiac disease are, you had mentioned IBS. And I think a number of people that we've talked to over the years have said, for years I was diagnosed with IBS or Crohn's mm-hmm. disease or diverticulitis. So for our listeners who are familiar with what those symptoms are, the stomach distress that you deal with, that sometimes clouds the issue. And then finally, after they go through many doctors, sadly, sometimes they have to go to multiple places to get answers to what's going on, they find out that, in fact, it's celiac disease. It's not IBS, it's not diverticulitis, and it's not Crohn's disease.
Right. And I think the challenge, too, is that there are more than 250 symptoms for celiac disease. Mm-hmm. And the common ones are the ones that you just mentioned. You have the stomach aches. There are people that talk about brain fog. There are skin conditions such as dermatitis herpetiformis, which is something that is associated. But I worked with a gentleman many years ago, and he was having vision problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it was found out that it was because of his celiac disease. They had not diagnosed him. And when he went gluten-free, the vision came back to his eye. So I think the medical community is at a challenge in that there are that many symptoms. But again, like I said, it's a blood test. You can do a simple blood test to check an antibody level, which is going to indicate, you know, should you get an endoscopy done?
Mm-hmm.
Should you get an official diagnosis? Because the thing about celiac disease, too, is that it can present itself at any time. It is not a discriminatory to age, to gender, to ethnicity, to background. It can appear whenever. We've heard of people at 2 months old all the way up to 75, 80 years old being diagnosed for the first time. So it's a challenge for the community, but again, a simple blood test would be a good way to start.
As a genetic disease, though, do you find in your own case, did the rest of the family get tested after your son was diagnosed?
We did, mm-hmm. and none of us were presenting the gene. So, and it's something that we continue to get tested for,
because
it can present itself at any time. We haven't had any genetic tests done; we just have had blood tests mm-hmm. done. But I've encouraged my parents to do so. My wife's encouraged her parents. We've had his siblings, and yet it's one of those things that we would love to find out where it came from, and we have some guesses, mm-hmm. but we don't have any concrete proof.
Interesting.
But what we did want to do with him, though, and I think what a lot of people, you know, and this is something that, you know, people with celiac disease, you know, they're isolated in many situations. It's, you know, there are things that they can't do that you just don't think about, and it's so associated. And so when he was at home with us, we all ate gluten-free. It wasn't something we knew. He was mm-hmm. not being able to eat with his friends at school. He struggled to go out to potential restaurants, etc. When we were at home, he was not isolated. Mm-hmm. We all ate the same thing. And so I think that was really helpful for him. It's one of the tips that we provide to people who have kind of similar situations like I did.
We are going to take a quick break. And Chris, when we come back, let's talk about what people can learn through the National Celiac Association. And we'll give you all a link where you can check out some more information. Chris is the CEO and Executive Director for the National Celiac Association. And more coming up here on WGN.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking with Chris Rich, who is the CEO and Executive Director of the National Celiac Association. This is Celiac Awareness Month. Chris, I'm curious. We have so much stuff we want to try and sneak in. When your son was diagnosed, did you have the same kind of experience that we did? And here's where I'm going. Of course, I was diagnosed in 2001. Diagnosed, went out, okay, where am I going to get anything gluten-free? Went to a Whole Foods, and I should have had a clue when the bread that we picked up was like freeze-wrapped, and the end date was a year in the future. We got it home, tried to eat it. It tasted like a brick, and we tossed it out. The birds didn't even want it. Cut. Now that was
a big hole in it too.
Yes. Yeah,
that was 2001. Cut to today. Oh boy, are there a lot of wonderful gluten-free options available?
Yeah, that's been one of the best things that's been happening over the past couple of decades. And even when my son was diagnosed and I started working for a nonprofit organization focused on celiac disease, you heard those stories of my pizza that I had tasted like cardboard, or the bread was, like you just said there, Steve, it was not even edible. I think in these past two decades, you have seen so many better options for people. More manufacturers are creating and putting out products out there that are good, that mm-hmm. are, you know, they're not one of the things you throw out to the birds. They're good, they're diversified products, and you're seeing just people now are starting to focus on how do we make them more nutrient enriched. And so those are just things that they're past the initially it was a flavor texture, but I think, you know, that's been figured out, and now people are getting into even more things. How can we make this even more of a more prevalent in terms mm-hmm. of items that people can select off the store shelves?
And restaurants, you know, thank goodness we've yeah. got restaurants that are realizing that there's this huge community out there that was underserved. And you know what? If they train their people properly and they jump on that bandwagon, it's a win-win for them, because they're always going to charge a little bit more. That's one of the big problems yeah. with where we are today with gluten-free dining out or purchasing food pre-made. It's always going to be more expensive. I'll never get used to a $9 loaf of bread. That's just really smart, but that's our yeah. reality, right?
Right. It's one of those things that if you look at like a certain box of macaroni and cheese that is similar to a wheat-made box, same size, same manufacturer, there's $1.49 versus $4.19. You're like, yeah. Why is that? So mm-hmm. yeah, that's hard. And you have one in six families in the United States who have celiac disease, they're facing food insecurity just
wow.
because of that. Yeah. They have to make decisions yep. in terms of what am I going to eat? Is it yeah. something I need to buy this, or can I have my staple items? But going back to restaurants, you know, Johnny, I have a good analogy for this. If you have a group of six people who are going into a restaurant and one of those people is gluten-free and cannot eat there, you don't lose one customer, you lose six customers.
Mm. Yep.
And so I think these restaurants now are finally realizing we have to have options. And yes, training of staff is very important, you know, for them to understand that if somebody orders a salad, it comes out with croutons. I just can't take the salad to the back and take mm-hmm. the croutons off.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to work that way. So I think you are seeing more restaurants that are coming up with gluten-free items. There's some definitions out there that are a little like what's gluten friendly, you know, but they're making
yeah.
efforts. And so you're seeing that across the board. With not only just sit-down restaurants, but also fast food and quick serve.
Yeah.
And we've been discovering more restaurants that when you go in and you say gluten-free, they will say, okay, are you on a gluten-free diet, or is this for medical reasons? And there is a pizza place that we went to, and when I said medical reasons, they said, okay, we will fix your pizza in a completely different oven.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And change gloves.
Change gloves, change utensils. My son learned early on that if he said, I have celiac disease, the servers often did not know. Mm-hmm. And he said, I have a food allergy, even though it's not a food allergy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It made the connection in their minds
yeah.
of, okay, I need to take this more seriously.
Interesting. Now, you yeah. are the executive director of the National Celiac Association. That's a nonprofit organization. Give us a little background about what the association does for the celiac community.
Sure. So we are dedicated to educating, advocating, and empowering individuals and families with celiac disease. And what we focus on is the healthcare system right now is focused on diagnosis, but not really lifelong management. When somebody gets diagnosed, there's been a study out there that shows like 35% of the people who get diagnosed, they leave from that endoscopy, that first initial discussion with the nutritionist or dietitian, and they still don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we exist to fill that gap. We're providing, you know, continuous care through expert education, through systematic advocacy. We have groups that are set for all demographics, from our kids groups, which are called Raising Our Celiac Kids, or ROC. We have ROC groups that offers for teens and kids and young adults. And then we have our celiac seniors, supporting our celiac seniors programs for, you know, our elderly population, and all things in between. We have various resources. Our website really is our best point of reference at nationalceliac.org. On there, you'll find a variety of options to get magazines and newsletters. There's various topics talked about on our frequently asked questions, such as how you deal with cross contact, 504 plans for the families have that with their kids in school. We do webinars. We just did one on travel last week, cook-along events recipes. So we're really trying to, you know, bring people information that they're seeking and they're looking for. Now, on top of that, we do have our support network that extends across the United States. We have right now over 50 local partners and chapters that are providing community support and resources specific to that geographic area. And so if somebody's looking for a restaurant in the area, or like, for example, you just said with your pizza place, somebody can call someone there and they say, oh, here's a great place for you to go to, or here's where I go shopping, et cetera. So we have those. And then we also have national level support, because as all communities know, it's, you know, you want to share, you want to hear other stories. You want to know that, okay, I'm not the only one going through this. So we offer up other opportunities. We have a national support group that meets virtually on the second Tuesday of every month. We have kids like elementary meetups. We have meetups for the parents and the caregivers. So we're trying to get people to connect and really be, you know, a part of a larger community to say, hey, you're doing okay. You can do this. It's a nice support thing that we have provided. And we kind of call ourselves the voice of the community, because we really do focus on that local level and that community support.
Well, now that we've met, I want you to use us. And we're going to be here. We're going to continue talking, as we said, throughout the month of May. Meantime, we want our listeners to go to nationalceliac.org. And it is just a wealth of information right there at your fingertips. And Chris, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
More coming up. News is next on WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Yes, this is the world's first gluten-free radio show. And no, that's not the Rolling Stones. We're going to play some of them a little later. That is the Knife and Fork Band, and song is called Gluten-Free Rock and Roll. And by the way, the song we played earlier was by Rita DeGent. It's called Gluten-Free, and it's from a live performance she did.
That's very cute. I had not heard that one. You surprised me with it. That was good. And our thanks to Chris Rich, who joined us.
He was really, really good.
He is.
And we're getting a lot of positive texts.
He is just a wealth of information, as is the website. So, again, check out the website. And I spelled the word celiac because you ain't born knowing this stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks will write S-E, it's C-E-L-I-A-C.
Yeah.
So I said, we're not going to wait till the middle of the night to give you this week's gluten-free recipe, because we did this just the other night, and it was the best meal. It was just a great meal.
And I'm going to say, you are going to really want to pay attention to this. If you can write it down, fine. But if you can't, check out our blog within the next day or so, and you will find the complete recipe along with pictures.
Yes.
And our blog is cleverly located at steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. We would love it if you would subscribe. There's no fee to subscribe. We don't spam you. You just get an email whenever we do a new blog post.
And we don't sell your information.
No, we do not.
It stays with us.
And candidly, we're trying to get a lot of people to follow us there, because Facebook has been crazy. Let me give you just one example of what Facebook did to us earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny and I are friends with a number of people.
same people.
On one of our pages, it would show, yeah, we're friends, and we could message the person. On the other's page, it wouldn't even show that we were friends, and you couldn't message the person.
I know.
And we found this with a number of people, and it wasn't either one of us that was always friends. It was back in Facebook is just getting really, really strange.
Somebody was complaining earlier today about how the emoticons that you can use to respond to things had also changed. And I thought, oh, it wasn't broken. Yeah. Why do we change things that aren't broken? Okay.
Now, this recipe, this is one of my absolute favorite recipes. And this is not just for a gluten-free thing. This is for a whole gluten-free
meal.
Dinner.
Yes. And what I wanted to do tonight was share with you a whole meal. So, for example, you have a friend who has to be on a gluten-free diet, and you've hesitated to invite that friend over to dinner because, hey, I don't want to make them sick. I know we've experienced that over the years, and I completely understand it. They said, well, let's just get together. We'll bring food. How's that?
Yeah.
We'll bring the meal. Yep. We've done that many, many times over the years. But with this particular meal, it's so super simple to make it gluten-free that you might find that you're making it all the time. And if your friend happens to drop by, yeah, they can eat that meal because it's safe. It's 100% safe.
Could I make one asterisk? Exclamation point before we even start.
Yes.
If you haven't cooked gluten-free, you need to make sure that everything has been washed, that there is no chance of contamination because it makes a difference.
Right, right. Because I'm going to ask that you use your slow cooker / crock pot. If you have a crock pot, more than likely you have cleaned it well, so you really don't have to worry about it. I put my crock pot in the dishwasher, so I know that it's been completely cleaned and it's safe to use. Of course, I would never put anything that has gluten in that crock pot,
right.
But I'm just saying, as an example, if you have your crock pot, that's what you're going to be using to prepare the barbecue ribs. Now, I know a lot of people
barbecue ribs.
Are very particular about their preparation of barbecue ribs.
Yeah, this is so bad that Johnny, even just talking about it, I get hungry for them. And I'm not...
You start salivating.
As I said earlier, this isn't just because that Johnny and I are married. These are the best ribs, falling off the bone ribs that I have ever had in my life.
You're not sweet talking me, is what you're saying.
No,
but
I am saying please make them.
But if you're like one of our engineers, Adam Phillips, or if you're like Spike Odell, former morning man, barbecuing ribs is an event. You know, you like babysitting the grill, or maybe you use a smoker. You enjoy the time spent doing those things. This is not a meal that's going to take any time at all. I mean, it's crazy how super simple it is.
But once it's been simmering in the crock pot for a while. The smell throughout the house is so good.
To prepare this gluten-free, you want to get a gluten-free barbecue sauce. And thank goodness Sweet Baby Ray's is out there. And Sweet Baby Ray's, and you will see on our blog, I will have a picture and I'll show you where it says in fine print on the back of the bottle, gluten-free. Now, if there's another barbecue sauce that you like and you're trying to make a gluten-free meal, if it's not labeled gluten-free, don't use it because there are additives that can be dangerous. So you be sure that the barbecue sauce you're using, like Sweet Baby Ray's, is in fact labeled gluten-free. Mm-hmm. You can't go wrong with Sweet Baby Ray's, I'm telling you. So I get the original... Nothing with teriyaki, nothing fancy, just the original barbecue sauce. And it typically takes a whole bottle of barbecue sauce for a couple slabs of ribs.
Yeah.
So you've got your crock pot and you can oil the inside of it, just lightly oil it or spray it with Pam. And with the ribs, I like to use a pork back ribs, like a baby back ribs, a slab of those. I pick them up at Mariano's, in fact, that I find that theirs are the best, made by Hormel. When you take them out of the package, you want to dry them with paper towels. Dry the full slab of ribs. Dry them really, really well so that the sauce will stick. If there's a membrane on the ribs that you're preparing, And for folks who've looked at ribs before, you know what I'm talking about on the backside. And you can take a knife and slip under there and pull that membrane off. I'm telling you, with the ribs that I'm buying at Mariano's, you don't have to do that. So you've got your slab of ribs. They're nice and dry. And now you're going to get all messy because you're going to cover them with barbecue sauce. And holding that slippery slab of ribs, you're going to stand them up inside the crock pot. So they're lining the wall of the crock pot. And in our crock pot, I'm able to put three slabs of ribs, three whole slabs of ribs, easily a service for six people, a hearty service for six people with three slabs of ribs. And you line the crock pot, and then that third slab can stand up in the middle. Now, they've all got the barbecue sauce on them. They're all ready to go. You put the lid on. If you've only got 4 hours before your meal, so you're going to be eating at 6 and it's already 2 o'clock, so what? Set it on high. If you've got 6 hours, say it's noontime, you're going to have dinner at 6, put them on low. I've cooked them both ways, 4 hours and 6 hours. They come out exactly the same way. When they're done.
But if you do it for the 6 hours, the house smells so good.
Well, yes, the house smells good. Yeah. The house still smells good, and we had those on Thursday night. So the hardest part about this recipe, hands down the hardest part, is getting them out of the crock pot. Because now, as you try to lift them out, the bones are just dropping back into the crock
Literally,
pot.
Literally, the meat crazy. Wants to fall off the bones.
It is the craziest thing in the world. So what I do is I take two large spatulas and I slip it into half a slab, lift them off, lay them on a cookie sheet I've covered with foil. So now I've got a cookie sheet covered with foil, just end to end. It's got ribs all over it, right? Put a little bit more sauce on it, and just before we're going to sit down to eat, those go under the broiler to caramelize the sauce. Simple as that.
Yep.
And it just makes a beautiful tray of barbecued ribs. And again, it's hard to pick them up to eat. You're probably just going to eat them with a knife and fork because the bones are just laying in your plate.
That's what I do. And literally, you don't have to cut the meat off.
No.
The meat falls off the bones.
It's crazy. I know people say, well, I always put mine in the oven. Well, they dry out in the oven. They can dry out. They're never going to dry out. You put no liquid in the crock pot, none whatsoever. Just the ribs covered in barbecue sauce. Add a little more sauce when they come out of the crock pot so you can caramelize them under the broiler. That's it. In the blog post, you will see the two side dishes I serve with the barbecue ribs. One is gluten-free French fries, which are made by Ore-Ida.
Mm-hmm.
And it boldly states on the package that they're gluten-free. And we get the ones that, like, fast food restaurant French fries, they're called.
They kind of taste like McDonald's
like
fries.
Like McDonald's, right. Thin fries.
Yeah.
And I pop those in the air fryer for 11 minutes, and they're done. And the other side that I prepare is coleslaw. What are ribs without coleslaw?
Mm-hmm.
Not, you got to have coleslaw. Super simple. In the blog, you will see a picture of the coleslaw dressing that I use, and right there on Marie's dressing, it says gluten-free. So now you've got a complete meal that is absolutely as safe as can be, 100% safe, as long as you're, you know, not contaminating the food with something else that's in your kitchen. Point is, you can make a full meal, and it is the best. I mean, it'll just slap you upside the head. It's so good.
I'm so hungry for it
right
now.
So,
and again, that if you wrote it down, fine. If not, it will be in our blog within the next 48 hours. And again, our blog is at steveandjohnny.wordpress.com.
And there will be pictures of the items that I talked about, especially for the sides, so you know when you go to the grocery store what you're looking for. And if you've never purchased these products before. And the nice thing about everything that I've mentioned, whether it's Sweet Baby Ray's or it's Ore-Ida potatoes or it is coleslaw dressing made by Maria's, they have not bumped the price up just because it's gluten-free.
Right.
It just so happens that those products are, I guess, naturally gluten-free.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, isn't that novel? So you're paying the same price as all the other potatoes are and all the other coleslaw dressings
what
are.
Concept.
So, yeah. So all of that will be made available to you. It'll be a great summer meal for you. You don't have to heat up the house because a crock pot slow cooker does not heat up the house. And you'll thank me. I know you will thank me. You'll send me text and tell me I've never had ribs that good in my life. Right?
It ain't bragging if you done it.
That's right. Stay with us on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That is Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr. It's called Home to Us. It's one of the songs from the new album that McCartney is coming out with. And it also features Chrissie Hynde and Charlene Spiteri. Was recorded at Abbey Road.
And the very first time that Paul and Ringo have done a duet together.
Yeah.
In what,
since 1963.
62? Yeah. So. For many, many years they finally got together. And there are a lot of Beatle-esque moments in that song.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I really,
I like it.
If I listen to the lyrics, it could make me kind of sad.
Well, McCartney says he wrote it with Ringo in mind.
Yeah.
Because the new album he's coming out with...
The Boys of Dungeon Lane.
Yeah, which kind of goes back to their early roots in Liverpool.
Yeah, he said when he wrote the song, he was thinking about where they came from.
Yeah.
One good thing I like is recently there were a couple of songs that Paul released, and I thought, ooh, he's sounding a little frail. But he sounds great on this tune. They sound like two guys just loving singing together.
Yeah.
And, Home Alone.
Or
Home Again.
Home to Us. Apparently when Paul sent Ringo a copy of the song, Ringo only thought he was supposed to do some little, you know, like chorus things. And Paul said, no, you're going to sing this with me. And I'll sing one, you sing one, I sing one. We sing together. And
you've kind of proven, you know, that you can do it.
Yeah.
Right? With all these sold-out concerts that you do.
So.
That's cool. Is there a target date for when the release is going to be?
Let me quickly check. I believe the new album, does it say here? The Boys of Dungeon Lane arrives on May 29th. And that's going to be the first album since 2020's McCartney 3.
Good stuff. We got some other new music coming up tonight.
Got some Rolling Stones a little later, too.
Everything old is new again, right?
It's a welcome to the second British invasion.
Right. Hey, coming up, speaking of music... He has left his news hat in his car, and
he's
in the house, yes. Bob Kessler, news dude, harmonicist.
Are we supposed to say harmonicist?
We're
going to ask Bob.
Yes. We'll call him a harmonic cat. How's that?
Well, there was a group called the Harmonic Cats, but
they're long since gone, so he can be one now. News is next. Stay with us here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love that. I absolutely love that. All of that is Bob Kessler.
One man, one mouth. Right?
Yeah,
there you go.
Hi, Bob.
Hello. Good to see you.
You too. Gosh.
It's wonderful. It really is. This is where it all started. I'm the projectile off the Steve and Johnny launch pad.
Yes,
everything that
it's
I've
true.
Done in broadcasting and in music had a lot to do with your not only encouragement, but introduction to people and experiences with
well,
you.
Well,
we just realized that it was literally today we realized it's been literally decades since you just came on board as our producer.
Yeah.
You're one of our first radio kids.
Right.
Right out of college.
Yeah. It was 1994. I think the job started in 1995. So
can
I
you
got
believe
my
it? Oh, my gosh. Do the math.
Right.
Oh, wow.
I saw the other day they're closing the link with the Lincolnwood Town Square, and I was like, that's the new mall.
Yeah.
It's 30 years old.
I know. You're the new Bob. Yeah. Oh, that was 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you were right out of college, and you signed on. I don't remember, so forgive me, because we've had a few kids since then.
Yeah, it's been.
You had a degree in... Radio, television,
communications. Yeah, they called it broadcast and electronic communications.
Yes.
At Marquette. Yeah,
yes.
That's where I went.
And you were a Cary kid, born and raised in
Crystal Lake.
Crystal Lake,
yeah.
Yes.
Right next door.
Because I remember we used to fret over the fact that you would get out of work after working for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Because remember, that's what our shift was.
Right. You were on 11 to 5, right?
And then you were driving all the way home. We'd say, he's going to fall asleep while he's driving home.
Yep. I used to nap sometimes at the
before you
Des
left.
Plaines Oasis.
Yes.
Or sometimes here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I moved to the city.
Right.
And you were nice enough to give me kitchen utensils, which I still have.
That's right. I remember.
And I used tonight. I was getting something ready for my Mother's Day brunch tomorrow.
Really?
The measuring cups you gave me are
I
still
remember
in my
the
cabinet.
Year you said, I want to make chocolate chip cookies, but I don't have anything to make chocolate chip cookies. And I said, oh, well, cookie sheet and all the other stuff that you need.
I have some of those very things.
How funny.
They've lasted.
Wow.
Yeah.
30 years,
right.
though.
30 plus.
Yikes.
That's just scary.
So you left our show and went to another day part, and then you went to another radio station.
That's right. I worked for what was Smooth Jazz WNUA. I was a morning show writer-producer with Ramsey Lewis.
Mm-hmm. That was a wonderful opportunity.
That was a great opportunity, also for broadcasting and for music.
Music, sure. And you got to travel with Ramsey,
too. We did
too.
A lot. We went to Tokyo and Europe several times. We had a big trip-a-day giveaway. It was a big promotion we were doing. And so, we probably did a dozen trips. That was really I got to see the world that way. That was cool.
Yeah. And you know, Ramsey is a rock star. Maybe not rock and roll, but
he really was.
Everywhere we went, people would recognize him. Paris, Tokyo, stuff like that. Oh, are you Ramsey Lewis? I mean, in Chicago all the time. We couldn't walk out on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah.
And then at O'Hare, but I remember it happening several times. People in all these other countries, because he was an international.
Sure.
International jazz?
Yeah.
Jazz star.
Yeah. So you left that station and came back?
Came back here.
To WGN.
Yeah, a few other jobs in between, but yes.
When you first came back, because you left then.
I'm not even sure I
remember. Left as our producer, and then you came back as our producer for a while.
That's
and
right.
And then eventually segued to the newsroom.
Yes.
You came back as our senior producer.
Right.
Yes.
I got moved around a little bit, and then the newsroom happened because they knew that I liked doing that, and you had encouraged me there, and I went and covered Farm Aid at Tinley Park.
Yeah.
With Mary June, who was program director, liked what I had done, and then they said, well, we need some weekend people. So they moved me. I was doing weekend news. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I got the Ramsey offer. So I took that, but I stayed and did the news.
That's right.
Yeah.
But we cannot forget the legend that he was, Dick Sutliff, because
exactly.
he was very, very instrumental in your
Dick
honing your news
skills. He was,
skills.
I kind of feel like I'm Dick Sutliff sometimes because I work with younger people. I try not to be in certain ways, but I try to be in other ways.
Yes.
And how many times do you find yourself either listening to radio, watching TV, or reading a newspaper and thinking, Dick Sutliff would hate
Because grammatically that's wrong.
Yes.
You know?
Hate that you said travel. Headed northbound. It's headed north. If you're saying bound, that means you're already headed, so you don't say headed northbound. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he would leave me voicemails that were several minutes long about that thing alone.
Well, that's why he became, we lovingly called him our curmudgeon.
Yeah.
Because he was not shy about
it.
And it was helpful because he would correct you instead of, you know, stewing about it. He would say, hey, you did that wrong.
Literally. And Johnny can affirm this. Every time we're watching a newscast and I hear the reporter say, the president today issuing, and I want to say, issued, and I can hear Dick Sutliff
today,
just going ballistic.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. God bless him. He was a character. You're absolutely
really
right. And you guys had a great friendship, and he mentored you.
Yeah.
I mean, it was obvious that you carry some of the Sutliffisms with you in the newsroom.
Yes, and that's the nice thing about having mentors. You know what to take with you and what not. And
Yeah, well, that's true. Yes. Bob Kessler is with us in the studio. And
Before we break or anything, one of the reasons you're here tonight, you have a new album called Frequency.
Yes. It's all harmonica ensembles.
How can people download a vinyl?
It's streaming, and you can download. The best place to go to is it's bobkessler.herenow.com. Let me go to that to make sure that's right.
That would be handy.
It's bobkessler.herenow.com.
my God,
and
Bob.
So Apple Music.
Wait, time out. Bob just put on readers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
that's right. I'm sorry.
Devastated.
That's so wrong.
I'm devastated.
That is so wrong, Bob. I've had these for 10 plus years.
I know.
And I'm looking down my readers. So, yeah, it's on Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon, Pandora, Deezer, whatever that is. And
you sound like something, yeah. Whatever that is.
And Deezer,
it's on Tidal.
And Tidal?
It's not a Tidal, T-I-D-A-L. That's the streaming service.
Really?
Tidal, YouTube, and I don't think it's on Spotify yet. That one, for whatever
reason,
takes a little longer.
Well, it's everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah. It's everywhere. Yeah. So it's streaming is the...
And this is your first album, right?
It's actually the second. The first one was called Amplitude Frequency.
Yes.
Yes. So that came out... I did that in 2014, and that also that was all harmonicas stuff that I wrote.
Ah.
Composed, if you will. And this one was things that other people wrote, other composers.
We'll talk about some of those people, too, that Bob recognizes with his music in Frequency, his new album. Stay with us. Bob Kessler, our guest here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman on WGN Radio. You are listening to Bob Kessler from his new album, Frequency. Explain, though, what that track was.
So that was World of Wonders by Bruce Cockburn, the great Canadian... Mm-hmm. I guess you could call him a folk singer.
Mm-hmm. Alternative folk.
Yeah. very much of that adult album alternative format. I have known about him and was a fan for many years, but for whatever reason, in the last maybe 5 or 6 years, I was just listening to him more. And when the time came that I decided I wanted to make these recordings, which was the beginning of 2025, I was just listening to a lot of his stuff, and I said, yeah, this will work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started the album with that one, World of Wonders, and then I close it with Pacing the Cage, a beautiful song of his. Yeah, and he writes such great lyrics, but his melodies are really great, too, and his chord progressions and other things, his harmonies are really interesting. So
how difficult is it when you decide, okay, here's this artist, I like this song, I want to do this all harmonicas. How difficult is it for you to do something... where you come up with all the parts, yet you want to retain some of the feeling of the song.
Yeah.
Where do you go to do that?
It was just a lot of experimenting, really. Okay. I would record stuff and see, does this actually work? And sometimes it didn't. So I had a long list of things that I wanted to do, and some things just didn't really translate.
Would you layer with various harmonicas?
Yeah.
Because they do have different sounds and tones.
Different and, registers. Yeah. So that one had bass. All of them, all but one, maybe one doesn't have bass of the eight tracks that are on this.
Bass harmonica.
Bass harmonica, which is a big sandwich size thing. And so that was part of it. And then the blues harmonicas, the 10-hole diatonic, those were either chords or melody or both. So that one was with those three things. So bass, chord harmonica, which was the diatonic, and then playing melody on top of that. So I'd have at least three or four tracks, up to eight. I just use a basic eight-track digital recorder. I didn't want to use any computer screens. My time here, I'm surrounded, as we are now, by screens, and so I didn't want to make the recording process more screen time. So I just bought this little eight-track Tascam thing, and the only screen is the digital readout.
2 inches?
It's just yellow. And a little tiny. It's like looking at a digital watch. And it made the recording process so much more enjoyable because I wasn't, I think I was avoiding making more recordings because I didn't want to do more screen time.
Okay. I'm going to get into the weeds just a little bit for a second. Do you use a click track or how do you, since you're overdubbing yourself, how you want to keep in time and yet...
Sometimes yes, sometimes
okay.
No. Certain ones I did. I think maybe the earlier ones I did. My timeline for this is I wanted to spend a year making it. It took a little longer, and I wanted to do roughly one song per month. So some of the earlier tracks, I think there was a click track because there is that feature on there. And then later ones, I got away from it more.
Did it matter which kind of harmonica you started with? I mean, would you start with the melody, the bass, or start with the melody and then
different for each
add
one,
the other stuff and then maybe go back and change the melody? So
it was an ever-evolving process. Sometimes I would start with maybe the chord part of it and then do the melody and it needs bass, or I would start with bass, but then sometimes whatever I started with, then whatever I put on top of that, well, I need to go modify that older stuff. So, yeah, it was a lot of trial and error.
I'm listening to Les Paul.
Yeah.
As you would
exactly,
explain to us about,
right.
And I'm like, what? Yes, we started with the eighth harmony and then build from there.
Yeah. And did you find yourself, because Les, I'm sure we've told you, Les told us that one of the problems after he invented the 8-track was, okay, now he didn't need to worry about making a perfect performance because he could go back and tweak everything.
Yeah.
At what point do you say to yourself, stop tweaking!
Yeah,
it
was the end of the month. So that's why I was like, it's the end of the month, and I had to sometimes just say,
that's it.
That's it, because you just have to be happy with it and leave it as is.
So it was brilliant that you started out with these are my parameters, and I'm going to stick to this. I'm going to be disciplined, and at the end of the month, this song is going to be done, and I'm going to go on to the next song.
Right.
That's cool.
Sometimes it took longer than a month, though, just to even get to having enough to have a complete piece. Sometimes it was a month and a half. In the summertime, sailing season, I'm a little bit less, the discipline, you know, dissipated a little bit, but that's okay. Yeah. So that's why there's 8 tracks instead of
12. Yes.
But 8 tracks is good.
I'm glad you addressed that, because I thought, well, wait a minute, it's taken them a year, and we've only got 8 tracks here.
Sometimes it took a lot less time. I was still working on it in January, and I thought, wow, the track Anthem by Ralph Towner, who's this jazz acoustic guitarist, really brilliant. I was like, I think I'm gonna take a crack at Anthem. And that one came together really quick. Mm. And then I thought, oh, I've been practicing this Ornette Coleman piece called Kathleen Gray. Mm. And I was doing it just as a practice piece on the little diatonic harmonicas, the blues harmonicas. Mm. And I'm like, well, maybe I'll just record it and see how it sounds, because it's written. He did a lot. Most of his work was improvised, but this was one that was written. Just fits on a page.
Mm-hmm.
And so I recorded it and learned it. And it takes a lot of what I call the Levy techniques, Howard Levy, our mutual friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a great piece to work on your fluidity. I thought maybe this could work on the recording. The original recording of it is Ornette on saxophone. There's bass, drums, and guitar. Pat Metheny on guitar, hero of mine as well. So I did it on regular old blues harmonica. I kept doing it over and over and over and over and over again. I probably did like 25 times. And I thought, this is just, for whatever reason, it didn't sound right. But I'm like, I've played the life out of this. If I do one more take, it's not going to be any better. So I switched to bass harmonica and played it on bass harmonica. And the first take of me playing bass is what ended up on here.
Wow.
And I left in a couple of mistakes, too, just because I was like, why even fix it? Right? So I left the mistakes in. I think I managed to like tap dance my way back into the piece. And then I added improvised harmonica underneath that. Little clips, little like, it was like, I don't know, like putting like a collage of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I didn't even know how that would sound. I just wanted to get myself out of it. So I said, I'm going to just take improvised work and just like blindly cut it up and just throw it underneath. And that's what I did. And I was happy with that.
Worked.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in the camp where I'm in favor of leaving in mistakes.
Yeah.
And I go back to a quote. What was it? I think it was Elvis who actually said that a lot of his records weren't perfect because if the feeling was there, that was the important thing. You don't want to record so many times and do so many overdubs that it becomes sterile.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you mentioned Howard Levy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Howard is like up on this pedestal when it comes to guys who play harmonica.
Right.
You actually studied under Howard, right?
Yeah.
Did you meet him on our show?
I didn't meet him on your show. I met him when, was it Tommy Emmanuel? You had that show at Shuba's.
Yeah.
And he was sitting behind
me.
And I introduced myself. Yeah. And so that's how I initially met him.
Yeah.
And I started taking lessons from him. And then I started working for him. I did some album cover designs and drove him to a few music fests. And
I'm getting a finger from the other side of the glass. So
we're
getting the one finger salute, which means we better stop talking and get to the news. So we'll do that. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. You're listening to the harmonicas of Bob Kessler. Mm-hmm. How many harmonicas do you have?
Probably there's a case sitting on my desk at home with probably 25 of them laid out there. that are part of the normal rotation.
Yeah.
But there's like, oh, there's the low F made of plastic, and there's the low F that's bamboo, and they sound just a little different. Then there's the high F.
Okay, so is it the same thing that I tell Johnny, because she has hundreds of shoes, and I still haven't approached that number of guitars.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm working on it.
Yeah.
But as I tell her, each guitar teaches me a different song.
Right.
Is it the same thing with harmonicas?
Kind of, yeah. Well, they are tuned to different keys. So okay. F being one of the lower or higher ones, C is in the middle, and B flat.
Which is it, lower or
it's
higher?
Both. There's low F and high F. So,
oh, golly.
So, yeah, and they all have their own little personalities, each of them. Right, kind of like shoes.
So if you had to, if the house is burning, and you can only leave with one harmonica, because Johnny knows, if God forbid that ever happens, she gets Baby. Baby is my 1959 Gibson ES-355 TD.
Of course. I know that one. It has your name on it. Yeah. The red one. Is it red?
Red.
Yeah.
So is there one harmonica?
It would probably be the low G, because that's the most versatile. It's on the lower end, but it's the most versatile. Yeah, and it's the one that has the best feel. That particular one, yeah.
But when you mention your case of harmonicas, makes me think of Howard Levy and Corky Siegel.
Yeah.
Two fabulous, legendary harmonicists here in Chicago. They said it's so easy to travel because, you know, I'm going to Israel and TSA looks and goes, oh, cool, harmonicas. You know,
have to take them out. They look like guns in luggage, though, I've learned.
Oh, really?
When they go through the x-rays. If you go through the...
Really?
If you go through... I mean, they don't look exactly like guns, but they look enough like a weapon that they will...
Your attention.
They will search. So I usually take the case out and say, I'm carrying harmonicas.
Yes. They're not loaded.
Right. Not yet. Yeah.
Wow.
For people just joining us, yes, this is the same Bob Kessler you hear in the newsroom. And you hear him playing harmonica with John Williams on Fridays for the
Bright Side.
Yeah.
And the new album is called Frequency. Mm-hmm. And again, for people just joining us, they can get it how and where?
If you go to bobkessler.hearnow.com, and you can listen to sound clips, and then it will link you to places to do streaming.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
place. What's the hearnow.com?
So that's through CD Baby is a platform. They used to do CD distribution, but now that's not really happening anymore. So that is... a platform they offer you when you use their services.
And
it just provides all the link. It's a link tree.
Well, that's
neat. So this will link you to Apple Music, iTunes, and all the other streaming services.
Yeah. That's really neat.
Yeah, it was handy, and it has the artwork and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And let's back up for a second, because since you started playing harmonica, now we first, I want to say the first time we were aware of your musical abilities was when you decided you wanted to learn how to play clarinet.
Yeah, well... I think the first thing we did anything musical was Stormy Weather. We were doing the Pumpkin Fest remote on a Saturday morning.
That's
Stormy Weather
did
a Monster Mash with Sven Gulli.
That's right.
And then...
In fact, that was the day that Sven Gulli came out of retirement.
Yes.
And that led to, a couple weeks later, a conversation we had with Neil Sabin, who had just left from WPWR to go to the U. And he was looking at getting some new programming.
And we conferenced.
And I remember the conversation we had. We were at a McDonald's on the north side, and we conferenced Sven Gulli and Neil. And that's how Sven came back to TV.
And now he's internationally recognized.
He has fans
everywhere. I think that's so cool. So I played with Stormy Weather and Sven doing Monster Mash.
Right.
That's how you knew it. And then... Sometimes on your show, people like Robbie Fulks would come in, and you would encourage me to jam with him, and that happened. So I learned clarinet. I wanted to learn more about jazz because I was working for Ramsey at that time, and it was kind of rubbing off on me. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, clarinet would be a good direction to go in. Mm-hmm. So I started taking private lessons on that and group lessons with David Bloom, the Bloom School of Jazz. So clarinet was a secondary.
And was the group Bakelite 78?
Yeah. And then met these people through some mutual friends, and this band started happening. We played a lot of gigs, and we did a CD, and I gave it to you guys. I just thought, well,
that's a great album.
Like it, and you called me or emailed me or something.
And that was somewhere that we need to dig up. We have all kinds of old pictures that were pre-digital that we have to find, because we have pictures of that megaphone, the whole group in the studio with him singing
through the megaphone. Yes.
And it sounded like a yes. kind of a Rudy Valley-ish thing.
And that was really, I was really proud of that band and that being on your show, and we got to play our big CD release at the Hideout, and we did the benefit show at Fitzgerald's. It was like a heady time, I remember. But I remember, the fact that you really liked it meant something to me. I didn't know if you would, and actually the other person that really liked it was Ramsey. I gave him a copy, and I'm like, oh, he won't even listen. He said, you know, this is really good. I like that you're doing something different, because it was this, like, 1920s kind of sounding music, but it was
all
original
these young guys.
Music.
Yeah, you're all doing this sound.
It was original music, most somewhat. So there were covers, too. But he really liked it. He said, you guys are really good. I think you really have something here, and I want to encourage you to keep at it. But you need to rehearse more.
And I don't want to embarrass you, but again, for people who are just joining us, you have played the Grand Ole Opry. Mm-hmm. You played stages in, what was it, Carnegie Hall?
I did play there, in 2024.
So explain a little bit about all those.
So that was the Carnegie, well, okay, Grand Ole Opry was actually through Dick and you guys. Because
Bill Anderson.
Whispering Bill was friends with him, so we were in
Who's
Nashville.
Going to be celebrating his 65th year in the Grand Ole Opry coming up
and
in July.
And he's going to be back on with us in a couple weeks.
Great.
And
fantastic.
He, because Dick Sutliff, our newsman Dick Sutliff, was such a big, big country music fan, they kind of bonded.
Definitely.
And then Dick said, I'm going to Nashville. And you said, well, I'm going with you. And then next thing you know, Bob's on stage with Bill Anderson.
Yes, so we did Po' Folks. Yeah, so there was that was Grand Ole Opry. Carnegie Hall actually happened because, Ramsey, when I was studying with Howard Levy, Ramsey said to me, well, that's great. You're studying with him. Maybe someday will come that Howard will get an offer to do something that he can't do. He's not available. And he'll send it your way. And I was like, that's crazy. Who would ever, you know, think Howard, you know, go from Howard to me? You know, I just couldn't fathom that. But it happened in 2013. Grapes of Wrath, the opera written by Ricky Ian Gordon, who's a contemporary composer, was being staged at Northwestern. It was a student production with a professional conductor and a few cast members who were professional, but mostly students, and they didn't have a harmonica player in the orchestra. It's not part of the being in school of music. So they asked Howard to do it, and he wasn't available, so he sent it my way. And it was this really great experience. I got to play with an orchestra, and it's all written out parts, so, and I could read music on harmonica. And it had, even one song had bass harmonica. And so I did that in 2013. And I think we did about 10 shows. And it was playing with a student orchestra like that. It's like playing, imagine like a college basketball team is almost as good as the pros.
Right.
So that was really cool. That was and it's a really great opera. And Ricky Ian Gordon, the composer, came to the dress rehearsal and opening night. And nobody was talking to him. And I thought, and I had started to learn about his career, and I said, I'm going to go talk to him. I don't care. So I just introduced myself. Well, I'm your harmonica player. And he was super friendly. And he's like, oh, that's great. Wow. And so he would come to Chicago with different things and play. He played Ravinia. Some of his operas were staged by the Chicago Opera Company. Mm-hmm. And I would come and I would say hi, and I did a couple interviews with him. So we got to be friendly. And then in 2023, I was doing the musical Big River at the Mercury Theater, which was also has a lot of harmonica. It's Roger Miller. What a great piece that was. So I found out that they were going to do Grapes of Wrath at Carnegie Hall the next year. I just saw Ricky posted it on Facebook.
Oh.
And I asked my friends in the pit, all five of us in the pit for Big River. I'm like, I think I'm going to ask if I can do this, or tell them I'm available. And they're like, oh, yeah, you should do it. So I emailed... Well, I think I might have emailed Ricky, the composer, but I emailed like info@orchestraofst.Luke's or whatever the orchestra was called, the Orchestra of St. Luke's in New York, and said, well, I'm this harmonica player, and I played Grapes of Wrath in Northwestern 10 years ago, so I could do it again next year if you want me, and just sent it out and forgot about it. That was April of 23, and I was at the Schoolhouse Beach on Washington Island with my little sister and my nephews and her husband. We were just on vacation, and I decided to check my email. It was in August. It was 4 months later, and I saw it was an email from the artistic director of the Orchestra of St. Luke's. Said, you know, we talked to Ted Sperling, our conductor, and we talked to Ricky Ian Gordon, the composer, and we would love to have you play Grapes of Wrath next year.
Wow.
So that's how that
Yeah.
That happened.
At Carnegie Hall.
At Carnegie Hall.
That's crazy.
And so I flew out to New York and did a week of rehearsals. I mean, I'd spent from like January of that year, the performance was in April, so I spent all as much as getting refamiliarizing myself with the piece.
Whoa.
Because it's written out. It's not like you're just jamming some blues. Not that that's not to diminish that at all, but you have to be right. It's precise. Yeah.
That had to be a pinch me moment, though, the first time you stepped out there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The coolest thing was walking in the back door because you have this. I still have it in my wallet, a little Carnegie Hall pass that gets you in, and you walk in the back door. I'm like, I'm going to Carnegie Hall.
I'm
going to
be on the stage.
And the orchestra, that orchestra will probably play there in any given year like five times. So the other members of the orchestra, who could not have been more welcoming, you know, they I don't want to say they're jaded, but they weren't as thrilled as me because this is the first
been
time
there.
Been there, done that. So I'm sitting next to the cello player during that time when everyone's tuning up and people are walking in, and the cello player is sitting next to me, and she said, "Is your family here?" I said, "Yeah, they flew in. My mom and dad flew in from Chicago, and my nephew's here, and my little sister and her husband." I'm like, "Yeah, they're up there in that box," and she's like, "Hi, hello," and she's waving to them from the stage. You know, so yeah, any kind of like stuffy orchestral decorum, she did not care about at all. She's like, "Hi, Bob Stanley." Yeah.
You're also saying they didn't look down on the harmonica. They actually appreciated having you there.
Totally. They could not have been more welcoming. And I've just learned that the better musicians, they make your job easier because they are prepared and they make you feel welcome.
Yeah.
The better people are like that.
Yeah, the pros.
The real pros. Everyone was like curious and super welcoming. Yeah, that was really great.
You do realize that one of your future projects has to be an autobiography. You've done some pretty cool stuff.
Yes. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I kind of want to do a fiction book. But I want to include that story in it.
That's right.
Yeah. His name will be Rob Kessler.
Okay, good. We're going to take a break. Bob Kessler is our guest. You hear Bob every afternoon with Lisa Dent doing the news, and then on Friday middays with John Williams on The Bright Side of Life. But he's wearing his musician's hat tonight, so stay with us here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That is the harmonica, the harmonicas of Bob Kessler. Okay, what was that, and who
that
originally
did it? That is Lefleur, which was written by a guy named Charles Stepney, who was a record producer. Had a lot to do with Earth, Wind, and Fire.
And he was in Chicago, and he did some wonderful arrangements for Earth, Wind, and Fire, and I believe also for the Dells. He was at Chess Records for a while and did some string arrangements.
And for Ramsey Lewis. So Ramsey Lewis was, I believe, the first to record that. So that was I did that in tribute to him. I recorded it in May of last year, his birthday.
Was it originally
It went to Minnie Riperton.
Minnie Riperton.
Yeah, she did the... Yeah. Minnie Riperton's husband wrote lyrics to it. But it was written first by Stepney, and Ramsey recorded it. He ended up recording it several times, but... And then Minnie Riperton, with the vocals that her husband, Richard Rudolph, wrote.
Maya Rudolph's dad.
Yeah, Maya Rudolph's dad.
That was the opening track. Oh, my goodness. You're making me remember a whole lot of things. That was the opening track to her first solo album, Come to My Garden.
Right.
Which is one of your favorite albums of all time.
And a great piece of Chicago. I mean, she does not get talked about enough when people talk about great Chicago musicians.
There's Chaka Khan. I love her.
Of course.
There's also Minnie Riperton.
There is.
Minnie with her four-octave range.
Yeah.
I saw Minnie late 60s, like Lafayette, Indiana. She did a concert with the Rotary Connection, and it was at a college, and it was just, I mean, they step on stage, and it was not your typical rock concert. It was special stuff.
She really was. But I did it in tribute to Ramsey, and it was a theme for, he did a syndicated show called Legends of Jazz that I was involved with as well, and that was the theme music for Legends. So that was part of it, too. Mm-hmm. So I did that in his honor.
So your music is categorized as avant-garde jazz.
I had to pick something.
But I'm listening to your music, and I'm going, well, now I know what avant-garde jazz is. I didn't know before.
I think I put that because I didn't know what else to put. Yeah,
here and there and everywhere under this big umbrella.
Right. It's not really blues. It's in a way, it's modern but not classical, but mm-hmm. kind of modern classical.
Well, you got a Warren Zevon song
yes,
on
right.
the album.
Mutineer, yeah.
And you mentioned Bruce Coburn.
Bruce Coburn, yep.
And who else do you...
And I did Drive by the Cars. I read this really great book that was about that band.
Kasich's book?
No, it was written by a guy named Bill Janovitz.
Okay.
Who was in Buffalo Tom. And he also so he wrote... There hadn't been a book written about the Cars, and he interviewed all the surviving members. So maybe that was just in my mind. But that song was everywhere, Drive.
Yeah.
In the 1983-84, mm-hmm. when I was just learning about like pop music on the radio. And
yeah.
the video to me seemed so serious and dramatic about this relationship and everything. Now I watch it, it seems maybe a little more kitschy, but still great.
But stuck in your head.
Yeah, and it always stuck with me. I always loved that song. So I thought, I'm going to try this. And I think it kind of worked.
But one of the many things I love about this album, and I'm not saying this just because you're in the studio with us, along with your playing, that you resisted putting a drum track on anything.
Yeah, it's just harmonicas, right. Yeah.
And boy, does that work.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was, there's a few groups that I like. One is California Guitar Trio. I might have given you some of their stuff.
Yeah. You're the one who turned us on.
Yeah. And there's a guy, Lester Bowie. He was a jazz trumpeter from Chicago. His wife was Rescue Me. Why can't I remember her name?
Oh, this is horrible.
Yeah.
Fontella Bass.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rescue. Yes. So Lester Bowie was an avant-garde jazz trumpeter, and he did several albums called Lester Bowie's Jazz Fantasy, and it was just all brass.
Hmm.
And so it would be trumpets, trombone, and French
horn.
But no
drums.
And no drums, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was an all wind ensemble, so that was an inspiration of it. Jimmy Giuffre, the jazz clarinetist and saxophone player, he did an album called The Four Brothers Sound, and it's just him on various saxophones and clarinet. A little bit of piano here and there, but it was drummerless, so that was a big inspiration. Jimmy Giuffre did a lot of drummerless stuff, and so Jimmy Giuffre's probably my favorite musician. I'm even thinking the next album might be all
really
Giuffre stuff. Mm. Maybe.
All right, that was the voice of Ron in the newsroom.
Thank you, Ron.
I just had to jump in.
Yes.
Sorry.
Well, thank you,
Ron, to the rescue.
And Bob Kessler, as again from the newsroom, but wearing his musician's hat tonight. We've locked the door, so he's here. Even though he has a pass to get out, we're not letting him out. So news is next, so stay with us here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. And Bob, what was that?
So that was Drive by the Cars, done
a
la harmonicas. Yes. That was one that I think I did it, and then I might have had to completely redo it because there something wasn't right. I couldn't put my finger on it, so I started over. And that.
So did you go past a month?
I might have for that one. Maybe that, but to the redo happened a lot faster. Yeah.
And for the benefit of folks that are just joining us, Bob gave himself a year, a song a month. So in that year, he came up with 8.
Yeah.
So there are 8 cuts on his exactly. his album Frequency.
And some took more than a month, and some took just a couple of days. It just kind of varied.
Before the news, you were talking music, and one of the fun things about working with you is frequently you would turn us on to music.
Oh, like Bill Frisell.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Charlie Hunter.
Oh, yeah, Charlie Hunter, who we had in the studio with us, and just a cool guy.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't you see him not too long ago
when
he actually remembered being on our show?
Yeah, so the group Super Blue, it's him and some other people. Kurt Elling, who's a jazz vocalist, who is a brilliant vocalist, and this is more
from
of a,
Chicago, I believe, right?
Yep, and this was Kurt Elling kind of cutting loose, and they do R&B covers and Eddie Money and all these things a la jazz. And I saw them at Space, and I didn't have a chance to say hi, but I messaged Charlie Hunter on Facebook. I said, well, I just want to say I love the show, and 30 years ago I was in the studio GN. You might remember this married couple, Steve and Johnny, they're still on the air, and you came in and we called Screamin' Jay Hawkins while you were live on the air. And he was like, and he wrote back, he said, oh yeah, Screamin' Jay, cool man. So he remembered.
That is so wild, because Screamin' Jay became a regular on our show.
Yes.
And remember, it was because of his visiting us on the air that the folks who organized the Chicago Jazz
Chicago
Fest.
Blues Fest. The
Blues Fest.
The 13th
yes.
annual Chicago Blues Fest.
And then he would be performing on a full moon. They
right.
brought him in for that.
You gotta
yep.
do that.
That was so cool.
That was.
But I don't know if you know, because it was 30 years ago when you became our first, one of our first producers, one of our first radio kids. We said, when we interviewed you for the job, after you walked out of the conference room, that's an old soul.
Oh, we you want, had mentioned that. To
we
me before,
want
yeah.
him. Oh. Because I think Steve quizzed you on.
Oh, I asked you, for example, if we said we want you to get My Blue Heaven from the music library, and you said, okay, would you want the Fats Waller, the Fats Domino, the Dwayne Eddy? And we, yep, okay.
And Steve said, yes! Yes.
Yeah, this is, you couldn't Google things.
That's right.
You
yeah.
had to go and
remember
look at paper cards.
We had a card library,
right. yeah.
just like at your library, where you pulled a drawer out and you leafed through it alphabetically,
right.
and you pulled the card and you'd go into the files. And
one of the bigger rooms when at the Tribune Tower Studios,
yeah.
where we used to be, was the record library.
Yeah, it
with
was
those,
very
with
cool.
those wonderful... the cabinets that were on rollers.
Yeah, and you turn the crank.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you could dig
like,
it through. And
I always said it was like in a Batman show, like you would be in the middle of it and somebody would crank you together and
yeah.
you'd be smushed between the albums.
In there, yeah.
But I as you were talking, I just kind of flashed back on that morning when you came in
yeah.
at like 6 o'clock in the morning after our show. We were interviewing possible producers.
Yep.
And you walked out, and Steve said, yeah, that's the guy.
It's literally, that we may have told you, you walked out, and we said, yeah, that's
him.
It.
Yeah.
Well, I had, actually, there was a woman I mentioned earlier off the air. Her name was Edna Ho.
Yeah.
Sure. And she was Bob Collins' producer, and I learned from her, and she
yep.
was just a real go-getter.
Yeah, she was with us and then moved to the Bob Collins
yeah.
show.
Oddly enough, you and Edna, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe these were the only two producers that immediately after interviewing them, they walked out, and we said, yep, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've been very lucky, but sadly, we counted over the years that we've had like 27 producers.
Right.
But the good thing was they didn't leave us because they hated us. They left us because they went on to other things.
Yeah.
They cut their teeth, and then they went on to do the morning show or
exactly.
the afternoon show.
I was coming in tonight driving down Lakeshore Drive and go past the Drake, and I remember when I would come into work,
yeah.
and it would be around 10:15, so it was mm-hmm. around 10:15 tonight,
yeah.
and I'm going making the curve, and I'm like, I remember every night I would drive in, and I would... be glad. I'd be looking forward to
yeah.
whatever we were doing.
Yeah.
And sometimes we had things that were planned, and sometimes
yeah.
things were kind of planned, but we kind of made it up as we went along, or you made it up as we went along, and
yeah.
I tried to help out best I could. Or
and we
but
were
it was good.
We were coming in after Milt Rosenberg, remember?
Right, yeah.
And we would have to play a long theme so we could shoo Milt and
yes,
his people
yes,
out
right,
of the studio.
Because they'd still be talking.
Oh, that's interesting. Listener says, it seems you have a bunch of old soul producers.
Probably so.
Yeah.
But. Maybe that we gravitate toward them. We'd like people who know things that happened even before the year that they were born.
Right.
That's the cool thing.
Yeah.
And sadly, you know, we were talking to somebody the other day and I got so depressed because wait a minute. Oh, we were talking about Paul McCartney and literally he was adamant about the fact that Wings were so much bigger than the Beatles. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, no. They were big, but they weren't bigger than the Beatles.
The numbers don't bear that out, among other things.
Right. Listener says, how do I get music by Bob? Okay, again, go to
bobkessler.hearnow.com.
bobkessler.hearnow.com.
Yes.
And another listener says, if I'm streaming the music, how do I pay for the music? Is all that laid out for you there?
Well, if it's any of the streaming services, you're already paid. You know, you're a paid subscriber.
Okay.
But iTunes, you would pay through iTunes and Amazon. So, yeah, those are the download
Oh, by the way,
services.
The person that just texted about old soul producers, that was our producer Julian, who was here up until just a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And I think
he's an old soul.
Julian got the gig because of that, too.
He's got an old soul vibe, too.
Yeah.
Oh, in fact, that reminded me, Julian, who is still our resident...
videographer.
Yes, I was going to say videologist.
Okay.
But... And he has some new videos of the River Road Trio that we'll be posting over the next week or so.
Oh, he's been doing. I don't know if you've seen any of the videos he's done of our live in studios. Because
he's
uses
good photographer,
four cameras.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing to watch him working those four cameras, and then he syncs it up, and Steve is engineering the music, and then he syncs it with his video.
Awesome. And one of the videos he did of Tommy Emmanuel on our YouTube page, it's like 140,000 hits. It's just crazy. Yeah.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more. So stay with us at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That is the harmonica of Bob Kessler. By the way, before we wrap this up.
This is where we started the show.
The definitive question. Harmonicist, harmonicist?
I don't really know. I like harmonica player because of that.
I said you're a harmonica cat.
That works, too.
You know?
Yeah.
Jeff came up with a pronunciation. And we went, huh? We all went, I've never heard that.
This is the Google pronunciation is.
Whoop.
Is burping.
Here we go. Here she is, we think.
Hold on a second, guys.
Jeff is trying
to. Well, for that reason, I always said harmonica player.
Yeah.
Because people do ask that, but I think maybe it's harmonicist. Was that one of the options?
No.
No.
He'll get it. You'll see. It's different.
Right.
Here it is.
Yeah.
Oh, harmonicist. That sounds...
It sounds clinical.
Yeah, it sounds like you need an ointment for that.
Yeah.
Or
do I need to take pills for that?
Yes. Right, right.
But by the way, speaking of different harmonica work, what do you call your podcast? You do a...
I did Harmonica Cast. That was
okay.
I would interview harmonica players.
Are you still doing
it? I haven't done that in a while. No. That was taking, you know, there's only so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
But I did that was great. Howard Levy was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So I did him.
Are they still available?
They are. Yeah. Peter Mad Cat Ruth, a great player from Michigan, and one of my heroes is a guy named Peter Hope Evans from England who is out of his mind, and I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
Like he's all over the place, but we have become friends just because I'm a fan. He mostly plays with Pete Townsend.
Mm.
Pete Townsend has a lot of solo records, and he has a lot of harmonica on it, and it's always the same guy, and I love his work. So I tracked him down, and we did it on, remember that thing called Skype?
Yeah.
Speaking of harmonica players, I have to ask you, this week, Jimmy Fallon...
Yeah.
Did you happen to see
that? I did. Johnny sent me a link.
Ron Wood and Jimmy Fallon.
Ronnie Wood played very... Do you want me to give you the like, honest harmonica
honest
thing? So Ronnie Wood is super musical, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he's simple in a good way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was great.
Yeah.
But then once Jimmy Fallon started playing, they were crossing lines in ways that just made my whole...
Ears
everything
hurt.
Ears and everything down to my toes hurt. They were just, their notes were crossing in ways that just, and then Jimmy Fallon starts doing Oh Susanna. Which is like the first thing you learn, and everyone's like, that was annoying.
I have a love-hate relationship with Fallon because I think he works so hard.
Yeah.
God bless him.
And he is musical.
Oh, he's very
totally
musical.
Yeah.
But he is so over the top.
Yes.
I want him to stop saying he loves absolutely everything anybody who is ever born that walks into the studio does. No.
And I thought it was a great interview up until that point.
Yeah.
I liked Ronnie Wood's playing on his own.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was right.
Well, it was funny, though, to sense, because this was a case of Fallon loved Ronnie Wood so much, and he was open about it, and you could tell that Ronnie was responding
to that.
You could
feel the love.
Yeah,
yeah,
he was like, this is cool. The guy gets me, you know, so that's okay.
You set off the air. You love recording it. You hate promoting it. Okay.
I didn't hate this. This is great.
In the few minutes we have left, what should you promote that you would hate promoting? What things do you have coming up with your album,
I have this. So I've put it out into the world, and I had such a great experience making it because I had these really great experiences. The pandemic was, you know, didn't get to do much there. And then coming out of the pandemic was Big River, which I loved, and then Grapes of Wrath in New York. And then once those things came and went, I worked on this. And it was a really, really fulfilling project. And so I'm curious to see where it goes. And so I just want people to listen.
Well, a listener reminded me of something, and we'd not mentioned this before, but you used to have a dog thing going on with greyhounds, right?
I had adopted a greyhound, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you
Joe.
Still have...
I know, well, you know, he lived to be about 11, so
really?
I think he would have gone on to the Rainbow Bridge. It was in 2016, I think.
Oh, my
yeah,
gosh.
2015.
Because we remember you originally as a cat guy.
I have a cat
Emmy
now.
Lou.
Yeah, Emmy Lou is my cat named Maka now. Mm-hmm. Was the... She actually belonged to a guy named Juan Pastor, who you should check him out. Amazing Chicago percussionist. He's from Peru. Mm-hmm. And where I used to live, my neighbor was his friend, and he was moving back to Peru. And so I got the cat. So I have Juan Pastor's cat. And then I'm reading, Howard Reich wrote an article, Juan Pastor's moving back to Chicago. And I'm like,
you're
is he
going to
want Maka
cat?
Back? Yeah. Turns out he didn't. So yeah. But I did have a greyhound. Yeah. And those are wonderful companion animals.
Yeah.
Yes. So if anyone's curious,
because
look into it.
Lisa is just a...
She's a dog lover.
She
yeah.
is an animal lover.
She
I mean,
is.
She's got a pig, for God's sake.
I know. I want to meet the pig.
Yeah.
I put that on my goals for the year.
Well, I just want to go to her farm.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go hang out
yeah,
there.
I do too.
And run with the
but
pigs.
Every year we have to, you know, Nexstar has it that you put your goals for your job each year, and my goal was to befriend the pig. So. It was one of them.
I hope you really did that. You said my goal is to be friends with her pig.
Yeah, why not?
Yes, I agree.
I mean, how would they look if they said that's a bad idea?
That's right.
Right?
What, you hate animals?
No one wants to be a pig hater.
Good boy. I'm sorry. For the officer who listens regularly on Saturday night, he said, don't make me laugh. I have 7 broken ribs.
Yeah,
so
sorry,
I'm sorry.
Who would you like to record with or perform with?
I've gotten to do that. Dave Alvin was one guy. I've played with him twice now.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a dream come true. The fact that I got to do that, I get to say that sentence out loud and it's true, I still don't believe it. Is there anybody around now that...
I think the next time we have Tommy Emmanuel in the studio, we have to have you come down.
Yes.
Let's have Howard. Let's have Howard.
No. You should do
Tommy Emmanuel is like 4 musicians at once.
Yeah.
Yes, but he's so welcoming.
Yeah.
He would really enjoy
someone... I wouldn't say no to that.
Yeah.
The times that, you know...
That would be awesome.
Okay.
But we got to get him back to Chicago because I'm really ticked off because...
Adrian Ballou,
you introduced us to Adrian, and as a result, we had him on the show a couple of times.
I would love to play with Adrian Ballou.
Yeah.
Didn't we first talk to him on it? Was it a New Year's Eve show or
I think we talked
like
to him.
That.
He was up for a Grammy.
Mm-hmm.
King Crimson was
was
Grammy nominated, and I thought, well, let's do something. Let's call. So he was at a Grammy party. He was probably one of the few Grammy nominees we could get. So he called us live.
That's right.
He was super nice.
Yeah.
And he said, I just met Marcia Clark, who was the lawyer from the O.J.
The O.J. thing, yes.
Which was, all the rage at the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I would love to play with Adrian Ballou.
Okay. So. I like that, too.
Yeah.
But mark this calendar. If we can get Tommy back in town, we're going to make the two of them
That
meet.
Would be fun.
Yes.
Let me know, 3 months ahead of time.
Okay, get you
Please,
ready for it.
You know, when I had Carnegie Hall, I knew about it in August, and I started practicing in August.
And we've had some texts, and people want to know, do you ever appear locally at any local concert?
I don't anything right now, no. The last thing I did was with Dave Alvin ever at Garcia's, really great venue. So nothing's on the calendar right now, but there'll be something.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about this album, it's not really performable by one person or even an ensemble.
Because you multi-track.
Kind of multi-track.
Yeah. A listener says, why did Bob play at Carnegie Hall? Did he talk about that? Yes, he did. So you'll have to listen to
the podcast.
In a couple days. You can click on the podcast and you can hear Bob tell the wonderful story of how he worked his way.
Can I slip in something really quick about that?
Sure.
So when Ramsey announced his retirement.
Ramsey Lewis,
and I was still working for him. He wasn't doing radio anymore, but I was still working for him. And he was approached by the Carnegie Hall people to do a farewell concert. And he told me he would like me to perform at the concert. Mm. Of course, I said, Ramsey, I don't know what to say. You know, I was just so I was speechless. And he said, well, I said, do you mean it? He goes, yeah. He goes, I play music. I don't play around with music. I want you there. And so the concert didn't happen. I think he was going through maybe some health things. I don't really know. So the concert didn't happen. And he told me that, it's not going to happen. And it was fine. And, easy come, easy go. But it was, a couple of years after he died that I got the gig. So I don't know. Hmm. Make of that what you will.
You were destined to be on Carnegie Hall.
Maybe. I mean, I think I belonged there in the sense that I could do the job, right? And I had put forth the effort to make the connection to do it.
Right.
But, yeah.
It happened.
Make of that what you will.
Bob is available. Real quick, one more time, if they want to get frequency.
BobKessler.HereNow.com.
All right. And again, the podcast will be available for those of you just tuning in and you missed this scintillating conversation.
This has been. This is so great.
Thank you, Bob. It's always a pleasure.
It's always fun.
Yeah.
We got a break. More coming up. Stay with us at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We still hear from some people who, when they hear that, they think, well, something just happened on my computer.
I know. It seems like forever since we've talked tech with Patrick, doesn't it? Gosh.
Hi, Patrick. Nothing to talk about this week.
No, this has been a really quiet week.
Yeah.
Explain, though, that that text that we got, I guess it was on, was it Thursday evening?
Yeah, it was Thursday afternoon.
What's happening?
Yeah, the whole EdTech world had a very interesting week this week.
Because of Canvas. Now, people have probably heard the word Canvas, the Canvas system. Now, that is an online learning system that schools like USC and hundreds of other schools around the country use, right?
And I knew something big was going on when Patrick's text said, there are about 9,000 schools impacted by this.
Yeah, this is huge. If you haven't been, or if you aren't a parent and you haven't been in school in a long time, you might not know what a learning management system is. Nearly every educational institution in the world, and this is colleges, universities, K-12 districts, they all have something called a learning management system. This isn't new. Learning management system's been around for, gosh, 30 years now, and they've been big in higher education since the George W. Bush years. So, I mean, it's been forever. But it's sort of an online place. The schools buy it, and it's a place for the teachers to post their syllabuses and assignments and handouts and papers and everything like that. And it's also a place for them to post grades. And it's also where students turn in their homework, take quizzes, get their final marks. It's pretty much the online workspace for education. It's really, really, really important. So most educational institutions, rather than hosting a learning management system of their own, they go out and buy a learning management system from one of the biggies. That would be Blackboard, that would be Desire to Learn, or for Instructure. And then actually in about the mid-aughts to early teens, schools kind of realized, you know what, we don't want to run it on servers. Can you just host it for us? So you hire the company, and then you buy a license for the software, and then you host it there. So the biggest LMS providers are Desire to Learn. They make Brightspace, Blackboard. They make Blackboard Learn, and Instructure, which makes Canvas. And Instructure is a Utah company. I actually have been to their headquarters. And they really are the biggest. They have about 40% of the higher education market, thousands of institutions around the world, including U of I, UIC, Illinois State, Northwestern, Loyola, DuPaul, Harvard, Stanford.
Did you say around the world?
Around the world.
Wow.
I mean, it's just,
I had not heard that.
Huge. Yeah, this is big. Mm. So the thing is, Instructure, they make Canvas. But when Canvas goes down, school stops everywhere at the 40% of the institutions around the world that use it. And this is the education equivalent of air traffic control going down. Or if you've been watching TV, it's the education equivalent of season two of The Pit. So let me tell you what happened this week, and you probably heard about it on the news. Back on April 29th, Instructure detected that somebody had broken inside of Canvas. And we don't know how many schools have been infected. The bad guys say it could be all of Instructure schools. It could be thousands of them. Instructure caught them, revoked the access, started an investigation, brought in forensic experts, and they obviously notified the FBI and CISA. If you haven't heard CISA before, that's a Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. on May 1st, Instructure quietly posted on their status page, oh, we had a cybersecurity incident.
What?
But we're checking on this. Back on May 2nd, the chief information security officer for Instructure said, you know, we looked at this. We believe the incident has been contained. Hold that thought. I want you to remember this. Yeah, okay?
May 2nd. So the,
yeah. So the chief information security officer saying, we think this has been contained. Back on May 5th, Instructure then notified all the schools saying, hey, there's been a vulnerability here. We're kind of getting, you know, figuring out what's been released. May 6th, they publicly told everybody, it looks like the bad guys broke into Canvas at like all of the institutions or a lot of them, took the students' names, took email addresses, took student IDs numbers, and here's the thing that scares me, messages between Canvas users. In other words, messages from an instructor to the student or from a student to instructor, those tend to be very private. Now, it doesn't look like the course materials have been broken into. So in other words, grades haven't been released, but it's that user information and those private messages that have been sent to and from that's concerned. Instructure back on May 6th also said, you know, we looked at this. We consider this to be resolved. Don't worry about that. By the way, hold that thought. So we've got, you know, they're saying, okay, we fix this. And then, no, we've resolved this. On Thursday, and this is when I sent you the text, things got, well, it got loud, real quick, because the people who had broken into Instructure earlier, back on April 29th, broke in again.
What?
And students and faculty around the world, when they logged into Canvas for their institution, so UIUC or Northwestern, they tried to log in, they got a defacement page instead of a login screen, and it was basically a ransom demand from a hacking crew called Shiny Hunters, basically saying, hey, we're here. You can't ignore us. You need to pay us some money. Instructure took Canvas around the world offline and said it was under maintenance.
So this is like number three, right?
Yeah. Poor choice of words here.
Yeah.
By the way, taking Canvas offline, remember, this is where you've got your syllabuses. This is where you got your handouts. It's you got your notes. It's your grades. It's where some tests are given. This came during finals week.
Yeah.
This came where students are either studying for finals or taking finals at a lot of semester-based schools. So this is big. And remember, Instructure had marked this incident resolved on the status page the previous afternoon. The hackers broke in the next day.
Oh, my gosh.
Canvas is back. It's been back as of Friday. Instructure restored it on about 10, sorry, 17 p.m. on Thursday, actually. Who are the hackers? Well, we've talked about them before. It's a group called Shiny Hunters.
The name sounded familiar to me. Were they the same ones that were responsible for the hacking of some of the medical institutions?
They are. They also got into ADT, Carnival Cruise Line, McGraw-Hill, Rockstar Games, even 7-Eleven. And here's the part that concerns me, and Johnny picked up on this, and you picked up on it as well. These Shiny Hunter group, they broke into Canvas three times because they've actually broken in once with University of Pennsylvania and got their data. So this is the third time in 8 months that Shiny Hunter has been inside of Instructure's environment. So if you or someone you know or a family member uses Canvas, what should you do? And the answer is nothing yet. Wait for direct contact from your school. Instructure is kind of going to let your school contact you and say, don't trust any sort of message from somebody saying, is your school on the list or anything else? Your impacted institution should have contacted you already. The professor should have contacted you. Your K-12 teacher should have contacted you, or they will contact you soon. I will warn you, brace for phishing. What that means is the bad guys now have students' names, students' email addresses, students' university or K-12 schools, and they're now going to send out messages. And Christine and I were in the car talking about this earlier this afternoon while we were driving Joseph to LAX, because of course we were. And we were saying, if I were an evil person, I would tell a student, I would send an email to a student. I would never do this, by the way. We have reason to believe that you used AI on your final test.
Oh, scary.
So we are now invalidating all of your grades.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Until you can prove that you did not use AI on your final exams, you are getting an F for this semester.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do to clear your name is to click on this link and download this scanner and have us scan your computer to prove that you didn't cheat, mm-hmm. and then we will restore your grade. Trivial for somebody to do this. And again, they'll have the information to mm-hmm. get that. Do not trust these messages.
Right.
Don't click on email links. Just keep watching instructure.com/incident/update. Watch your school and just be prepared. A lot of lawyers are looking at this because student data has been exposed, and this is going to be a bad, bad thing.
And I think Johnny may have sent you the information that we saw a little earlier today, that the University of Illinois, mm-hmm. on Mother's Day, they said, oh, well, okay, we think we're okay. So how about Mother's Day, you guys?
These were the tests that were supposed to happen on Friday.
Friday,
they canceled their Fridays and Saturday tests and said, okay, let's just give them on Sunday.
Yeah, it happens to be Mother's Day. And as I said at the top of the show, I said, that really bums me out, because not only do you have the stress of your final being delayed, but this is a test that could determine your future. Now you've got the stress of your mother going, what? We're not doing Mother's Day? But a listener shared an important piece of information along those lines. She said that the U of I had their Mother's Weekend 2 weeks ago, so the kids will be free to go and take their finals.
But I've seen a lot of professors just say, you know, here's what we're going to do. We're going to offer a final. If you want to take the final will raise your grade. If it doesn't, then we're not going to lower your grade. And you don't have to take the final if you don't want to take it. Not all professors are doing it. It's up to the professor to decide the grading.
Yeah.
But check with your professor.
Yeah. But I want to just reiterate something that you said for parents who are listening. If you have students, you have kids that are in school and they've talked about the fact they've been affected by this, remind them not to click on anything that comes email, because bad guys that now have their information and they're out to do some dastardly things. So just don't click on anything. All right, Patrick, hang on. We're going to take a break. We're talking tech with Dr. Patrick Crispin. Have a lot of ground to cover, so hang in there on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We are talking tech with Dr. Patrick Crispin, the Director of Educational Technology at the Keck School of Medicine of USC. A ton of things to talk about tonight. Patrick, what's next on your list?
Actually, I want to do a couple quickies, just some quick updates, because we've been talking about how we're in the RAM apocalypse. Everything is getting more and more expensive because of all the AI data centers eating up all the RAM. And heads up, if you have been thinking about getting a Nintendo Switch 2, which is the latest handheld gaming console from Nintendo, do it now, because on September 1st, they're raising the price from $450 to $500 in the U.S. It's actually $499.99, but $450 to $500. So more and more things are getting very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about AI, the thing to remember, we talked about a couple weeks ago about Anthropic Mythos.
Mm-hmm.
Mythos is that new platform that you and I can't use, but it was sort of a general purpose thing meant to teach itself coding. And when they released it to say, hey, could you find some security vulnerabilities? It was so good at finding security vulnerabilities that they declared it a serious national security issue, contacted the government and said, hey, here's this tool. We're not going to release it to the world. We're going to give it to all the companies and let them patch it. Mozilla, the people who make Firefox, have used it, and they have released, they used Mythos Preview and other AI models, they've shipped, in the latest version of Firefox, 423 security fixes.
What?
Wow. Compared to what they had a year ago at this time, 31. 423 this time, 31 a year ago.
What?
This is how good this is at catching bugs.
So should you, if you haven't updated Firefox, should you?
You should be updating everything. But Firefox, yes. Update Firefox. It is absolutely fantastic at catching these bugs. And unfortunately, it's not in the hands of the bad guys. It's only in the hands of Microsoft and Google and your banks and everybody. So as I said the last time I was on, expect to see a lot of security updates over the next couple of weeks. This is the beginning of it. Firefox has 423
Crazy.
Security bug fixes.
Wow. Yeah. And it was 31 a year ago.
31 a year ago. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
We also talked a while back about how the new MacBook Neo, which is sort of the entry-level MacBook, is out there, and that you can pay, I think, $599 for it, or you can get an education discount for $499. I think that was the price. It might be a little higher than that. Here's the thing. So many people are now trying to get the education discount. Apple now requires you to prove that you are eligible to get an education discount. So they're going to require you, if you do want to get the education discount, to create something called a Unidaze ID. That's a company they hired. And then you can verify with your academic status by using your academic portal, logging into your school, or uploading a photo of your student ID or faculty ID. So unfortunately, education discounts now are only going to the people in education.
Which I think is understandable, but it was being abused. So they said,
it was being abused.
Yeah, we can't do this any longer.
And I sent this to you in the show notes, so you know the answer to this question already.
Mm-hmm. But we had this conversation. On May 1st, Steve and I had this conversation.
Yep.
Go right ahead.
Does everybody remember Ask Jeeves?
Yes.
Back in the days, we used to use AltaVista, or we used Lycos, or we might have used Dogpile.
Yes.
And then Google came along, and everybody went over to Google. But Ask Jeeves was one of the biggies, and it was around for a very long time. So long, in fact. When do you think it actually finally shut down? It stopped working. Just take a guess. Just say it out loud. When did Ask Jeeves stop? When did they close their doors?
I literally said to Steve, wasn't it 95? I thought it was that long ago when we had talked about it every week, and then all of a sudden, nope, we weren't talking about it. Yeah.
Because I remember very specifically the night we were on the air. It was a website Wednesday night, and Ask Jeeves was the search thing of choice at the moment. And Patrick said, I have a new word for you.
Yes.
The word
Google.
Is Google. We said, what the heck is that?
What the heck is that?
Yeah.
Well, to answer the question, when did Ask Jeeves shut down? May 1st. 2026.
Six.
It stayed alive until 9 days ago.
And I felt sad. I thought I would have been using it if I'd known that little butler was sitting over there waiting to help me.
And I kept using it to find things on MySpace.
And then you wanted to put it on your bulletin board too, didn't you?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's gone. Bye-bye. No more.
It's gone.
All right.
That's the way it is.
When we come back after the news update, let's talk about the Apple suit and settlement and all that stuff. If you have an iPhone, you might be getting a couple bucks coming
and
your
also,
way.
And also, speaking of Google, there's another Google thing we need to talk about, too.
Yes, yes, yes. So a lot more coming up. Talking Tech with Dr. Patrick Crispin on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love those old standards. We're talking about a lot of things that are floating around the world of cyberspace with Dr. Patrick Crispin, the Director of Educational Technology at Keck School of Medicine of USC, and a ton of things on our plate this week. Should we jump up? We had been talking about Google. Should we talk about kind of a major story with Google Chromes and some hidden stuff that has been wandering around our computers?
Yes, please. And actually, a listener was the one who suggested the story. I did a little bit of digging. And if you are a Google Chrome user, that's their web browser, I want you to open up File Explorer, Finder on your Mac, and search for something called weights.bin, weights.bin, and tell me if you find it. If you do, congratulations, you have just found a 4 gigabyte offline AI model that's hidden on your computer that's been there for over a year or longer, and Google never told you about this. Not everybody has this file. I don't. But let me explain what's going on. This story went viral this week. As I said, it's not really new. I remember seeing this about a year ago on Reddit. Somebody found out that there was this, basically in this folder called OptGuide on Device Model, there was this 3 gigabyte file that was showing up. They were trying to figure out what it was. So nothing's new there. We're just kind of looking at this. What happened was this guy named Alexander Hampf, who's a privacy researcher in the United Kingdom. He's also a lawyer who is blogging under the name That Privacy Guy. He published a write-up showing that, hey, you know, Chrome is actually downloading this 4 gigabyte file and putting this in the OptGuide on Device Model. And it turns out that everybody was able to verify it. It's like, wait a minute, this is happening on Windows and Macs and Linux boxes. So what is this weights.bin thing? We all know about Google Gemini. That's their AI model. You might not know there's something, called Gemini Nano, and that's Google's small on-device version of Gemini. And it's designed to run locally on your computer and keep working even if you don't have any internet connection. If you disconnect from the internet, Google Gemini Nano is still going to keep working. And you do use it for things like, you know, help me write this, or hey, can you summarize this, or fill this out for me, or more likely, scam phishing and detecting and things like that. So it's a pretty reasonable thing in theory. The thing is, I'm not convinced this is a smart idea. Here's the thing. Yes, you want something running locally on your machine instead of on the cloud because nothing leaves your device. But Google never actually asked if they could put this 4 gigabyte file on your computer.
So it's actually taking up some of your disk space then if you have it on your computer.
It's taking up your disk space.
Right.
And you didn't know.
And it's been there for a year or more. And it's like, the other thing is, you know, they named this, the folder that they put it in, OptGuide on Device Model. That just rolls off the tongue. And it really kind of gives you the feeling they're trying to hide it. Had they said this was Gemini Nano, we'd all know what it was. We had to kind of figure it out. Other thing is, you might go.
Let me hold you, though. If listeners are looking now to see if they've got weights, W-E-I-G-H-T-S, dot bin, B as in boy, I-N,
yep,
and it probably comes up in their C drive, if they find they've got it, and they're like, what? I didn't know this was there. Oh, it's eaten up my disk space. Can they remove it?
Yes, but not the way you think it is.
Oh.
If you delete it, if you sit there and say, oh, well, I don't want weights.bin. That's 4 gigabytes. I want to get back. Delete, erase. Google, next time you open up Chrome or update Chrome, is going to sit there and say, oh, Chrome's broken. Let me download that again for you and re-download it.
Whoa.
So can you turn it off? Yes. You can't delete it, but you can turn it off and then it will delete itself. To see if it's installed, I'm going to give you a link in the show notes. And this is kind of weird. You all are used to going to https://. Don't do that. Go to chrome:// chrome:// on-device-internals. Yes, you're not going to remember that. I'll put it in the show notes. And if you see it installed on your computer, you can then go and it'll see if it tell you if it's there. If it's there, you can then go to Chrome, Settings, Systems, and toggle on device AI off. And once you do that, Google will turn it off.
Is Google the only one doing this kind of thing?
No. It turns out this is actually pretty standard practice.
Well,
Apple is doing this behind the scenes. Apple Intelligence has like a 7 gigabyte file that they put on all phones, and you can't really get rid of it. Microsoft is shipping something called Phi Silica, which is about a 4 to 5 gigabyte file model that they put on your Copilot computers. Samsung Galaxy and Pixel phones, they have Gemini Nano just like you get in Chrome. So it's not – so I'm kind of torn on this one. This is a good version of AI. I like local AI, not on the web. It's on your device. I kind of want this. On the other hand, 4 gigabytes is not nothing. That's a lot on a entry-level MacBook Air or a Chromebook. That's a lot of real estate. And someone needs to tell us about that. Had Google just said, you know what? Hey, we'd like to download this 4 gigabyte AI model just to make your life easier. Are you going to allow me to do that? And you say allow, don't allow, never. That's all. Had they done that, this wouldn't have been a controversy. Everything would have been solved. They didn't, and this is the world we live in.
It doesn't look good. It really doesn't.
It really looks bad.
Is there, from what you're hearing, any chance that we might be given the option of, okay, do you want it? Do you not want it?
I think their take on this is you can go and turn it off by going in the Chrome settings systems and toggling on device AI. That's going to be it. I don't think they're going to give you the option to say, hey, do you want to keep this on? I think they've shifted.
Okay.
And again, it's been there for a couple of years until we realized it. And now it's like, hey, wait a minute. What are you doing?
And it was under that. And it is under the Opt Guide on Device Model folder.
And isn't that the greatest name?
And it's all squished together, right? It's not like a sentence. Yes. It's all squished together. Yep. And you look at it and go, well, that looks kind of necessary. Like if I take that mess with it,
important.
I'm going to break my computer. Yeah.
Exactly. Waits.bin and the Opt Guide on Device Model folder. I don't know what that is. I might as well leave it. Had they said Gemini Nano, which is what it is, it's like, oh. Okay. And even then, I probably would have said, okay, yeah, sure, why not?
Speaking of Gemini Nano, Gemini in general on my Android phone is just annoying the daylights out of me. It just keeps popping up.
Yep.
Everything I try to do, it's like, well, Gemini can help you in that manner.
And I keep trying to find ways to tell it to go
sit down
shut up, so I need you.
Right. We're talking tech with Dr. Patrick Crispin. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Apple Siri settlement and whether or not you are going to be getting a couple bucks back from Apple right here on WGN.
Wait a minute. The craziest device your mom ever gave you? Or did she mean advice?
I think it was advice.
I think she meant ad, but it sure sounded like device. Patrick, how did it sound to you?
I remember my mom giving me a CB radio, so...
I'm just thinking of that electric mixer that I'm like, really?
We may have to replay because it sure doesn't sound like advice. It sounds like device.
All right.
And my mind went to, never mind.
Speaking of devices, if you own an Apple phone, news broke last week that Apple is going, oops, I guess maybe we did something.
You're getting millions of dollars.
No, you're getting dollars if you qualify.
You're getting dollars.
If you qualify, right, Patrick?
Yeah, Siri, as I said, is hot garbage. It just doesn't work, and it turns out.
You've said that
really
for
is.
A while.
And Joseph has said that, too.
Yes.
He's copied after me. it turns out that when Apple unveiled the iPhone 16 in 2024, they said, hey, we've got this Apple Intelligence. They had the Bella Ramsey commercial where Bella was speaking into microphones. Hey, who's that person I met at this party or a few years ago? And Siri gave her the answer. It couldn't do that. It still can't do that. Apple pulled the ads, and basically most of the features that Apple was talking about with Apple Intelligence still haven't shipped. Worldwide Developers Conference is coming up, fingers crossed.
Years after Apple, the fact that they were pushing.
Years
it.
After.
Yeah.
So, and that was a big thing to get an iPhone 16 was Apple Intelligence.
Right.
Some people said, you know, this is false advertising. You said that this is going to be live. It's not working. So Apple agreed to pay a $250 million lawsuit, class action suit. And preliminary approval has been given, and final hearing is going to be on June 17th. If you have an iPhone 15 Pro, 15 Pro Max, or iPhone 16 that you bought in 2024 or 2025, you're getting some money. How much?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the floor is going to be $25 per device, and if no one else goes and says I want my money, you might get up to 95. It's going to be about $25, which, hey, that's a gallon of gas, so
right. Yeah, there you go.
You know, that's great. Mm-hmm. You can claim if you have more than one device. What should you do right now? And the answer is nothing. Really nothing yet. We got 45 days until this goes and is approved by the court. Once that happens, you'll get an email or a postcard with a claim ID. There's going to be an official website, and I'll talk about it on the air when it goes live, but mm-hmm. just be prepared. You're going to see a lot of scammers try to get you to give them some information. They're going to send you emails saying, hey, here's how to get your Apple settlement mm-hmm. information. There's going to be robocalls. Anybody asking for your Apple ID password, your Social Security number, your credit card, processing fee, that's just not going to work. Honestly, just listen to WGN. We'll tell you when it's available, and we'll tell you how to file.
And if you purchased an iPhone, a 15 or a 16, between June 10th of 24 and March 29th of 25, you may very well qualify for a couple of bucks. Before we let you go, Patrick, in your opinion, do you think that Apple was right to step up and say, you know what, it wasn't what we told you it was going to be? You bought the phone thinking it was going to be, okay, we admit, we weren't able to do what we hoped we could do. Do you think that they kind of jumped the gun, or was this the right thing to do in your opinion?
I think both. I think they did jump the gun. I don't think they admitted that they did something wrong in this suit. I think mm-hmm. they just paid the $250 million to make the suit go away.
Oh.
I think you'll see that they did not admit wrongdoing in this case.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, but again, the suit kind of implies that there was some guilt there. So you take that for what it's worth and take your $98 and buy your gallon of gas with it.
Exactly.
It would be nice if they let you turn your phone in and get a new phone. They said, if you have one of those phones, when the brand new one comes out, you can turn it in and we're going to give you a 17 or an 18 or whatever comes out.
I like
they're giving you $25.
That's right. Yeah. Never mind.
There's another story that I found fascinating, and this kind of overlaps, and we may talk a little bit about this with Tom Appel next week when we talk car stuff. There's a story that came out from Polestar, which is a Swedish Chinese EV brand, and Patrick, you've got a little more on this about how your car now wants to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, it's rolling out Google Gemini to all of its cars, replacing the older, and I'm going to say it out loud, which is going to cause your smart speakers to wake up, so I apologize. They have this Hey Google assistant. Mm-hmm. All your speakers just woke up.
Hey Google! Oh, my phone just woke up!
Hey Google, play WGN radio. there you go. You're welcome. So basically, over-the-air update, there's nothing you need to do. If you have a Polestar, except for a Polestar 1, but all of the Polestars except for the Polestar 1, it's out there. And what it is, it's basically Google Gemini instead of Google Assistant. And what that means is that you now have more conversations. Sorry, now it's playing WGN radio on the radio. Okay, Google, stop. I just love smart speakers.
You're hearing yourself 6 second delay.
Okay, Google, stop.
That's
one
great.
Of these days, this is going to this is a Hall of Fame.
Pulled up, sir.
In the old assistant, you would go say, hey, find me a grocery store.
Right.
And then you'd have to wait for that. And now you can have a real conversation. You can sit there and say, hey, find me a supermarket on the way, let Joe know, tell me what my schedule is, and just have a full conversation. So it's kind of similar to what we did in the Grand Canyon, where we're using ChatGPT and asking things like, what's the difference between the Grand Canyon and Phoenix, and then having conversations with it. This is actually bigger than Polestar. Pretty much every manufacturer is now rolling out some sort of AI assistant in the car. Volvo's doing it. They started doing it on April 30th.
GM cars are going to go that route too, aren't they?
Yeah.
4 million Cadillac, Chevy, Buick, and GMC models from 2022 on with the Google built-in. Mercedes-Benz is doing ChatGPT. BMW has their own in-house AI assistant because, of course, they have their own. It's
it's a BMW.
And by the way, Hyundai, Ford, Honda, they're all going to be rolling something out. Mm-hmm. I kind of like this. This is a neat idea, but I also kind of think, do we need another AI assistant in our cars? I mean, I put it in the show notes, but has anyone actually said, you know what I would really like? What would make my car better? A chatbot. Nobody said that. I mean, no. I'm not kidding when I say I looked at my phone. I've got 5 chatbots on my phone. I've got ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, Copilot, and Siri.
Wow.
And when I get in the car, I plug my phone in the car. Mm-hmm. So why does my car need a separate chatbot? I have one on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
The argument, the reason why they're putting it there is safety. The old voice assistants, Siri, are so dumb and so bad that people would pick up their phone and have to touch their phone to do things. And that's really, really dangerous. If you can have a smart assistant and actually have it understand you and work, you don't have to pull your phone out. That makes it work.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. If this works well, this is great. Gemini in the car really doesn't work right now. It's not as good as we would hope. Gemini and Chrome is also the same. Let's see what happens. Just be aware. I would also be concerned about privacy here.
Yeah.
Remember that it's listening for the words that we just said earlier that triggers the speakers. My smart speaker went off when I said those magic words, and they're listening to those magic words and parsing what you're saying, sending that to Google servers, and something to be concerned of. So it's here.
And this is one of those where I can see both sides of this. On one hand, privacy concerns, on the other hand, my preference is I want to keep my hands off the phone.
Yep.
I want to keep them on the steering wheel. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be able to say to my car, hey, car, which route should I take to go to wherever?
Mm-hmm.
And if it could give me real good information and not, you know, we were in the car and asking Siri, how far am I from the ocean? And it said Santa Barbara is a certain, it was some inland city, and it was just that's wrong.
Yeah, but at least you knew knew it was wrong.
And I'll bring it back to partly personal. Tonight, we were almost not here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we're driving in, there was a woman who almost came right into us because she was
on her phone.
We were making a turn, and she's making the turn with us and almost comes right. I had to scoot out of her way, or we would not be here talking to you right now.
So hands-free would be nice if we can get it to work.
But everything that we've talked about, if you just went, my head, it's exploding, don't worry. The notes, Patrick is wonderful about making the notes available to you so you could read them, digest them.
They will magically show up on our blog, probably within the next 24 hours or so. And again, the blog is stevenjohnny.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm. We covered a lot of ground. There's a lot of annoying stuff out there to talk about. And I just keep thinking about the early days of Website Wednesday night when we just wanted to know how to turn our computers on, you know. Wow.
Oh.
Well, Patrick, thanks a million.
You're welcome.
Have a good week.
And the important thing before we let you go, how's Joseph doing? Any plane sightings lately or that we should know about?
We basically went out today. We were at the Proud Bird and watching airplanes again because that's our sort of regular thing, watching airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's good. Well, last week he wanted to find a peacock, and you guys went out and you found a whole mess of peacocks.
We found a whole bunch of peacocks, and he has, for those who miss Spirit Airlines, he's really heartbroken that Spirit is gone. So he has taken it upon himself to fire up Microsoft Flight Simulator and fly the banana planes all over Microsoft Flight Simulator.
God bless the boy. Hug him for us, okay?
Thanks.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks, Patrick.
Good night.
By the way, speaking of Spirit Airlines, I thought one of the cool things was what Southwest did for the pilot who was retiring on Spirit Airlines.
It was supposed to be his last flight, and when they shut down at 2 o'clock in the morning, word got out that he wasn't going to get to do his last flight, so they decided to meet him at the airport and greet him and give him that proper recognition, which was really sweet.
Yeah, and you can find the video of that.
It was moving.
Check it out online.
Yeah.
Okay, we got more coming up, so stay with us at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Hot dog, buddy, buddy.
I'm hungry for a hot dog now.
Yeah.
But first things first, let's talk about our favorite hot dog place in Chicago. With us on, hey, Lisa, are you with us?
I sure am. Hi, Steve and Johnny.
Hi there. We're talking about Super Dog.
And Saturday was the anniversary of Super Dog, 78 years
ago?
78 years ago, May 9th, 1948. Opened at Milwaukee, Devon, and Nagel. And I'm sitting here today, and you guys said it was yesterday. For me, it's still today. It's still today until I go to sleep.
That's so right.
And we're still open. I'm sitting here. We got cars in the parking lot.
Really?
Walking up.
Oh, my
we're
gosh.
Open until 2 a.m.
Now, Lisa, you are the daughter of Maury and Flory, who are always going to be smiling down on us as the hot dogs on top of Superdog, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And as dear friends of Steve and Johnny.
That's right. They wink at me every time I drive by.
They do. They really do. And we had several events at the location you're at right now.
Yeah. Wonderful events.
Brings back happy smiles and happy memories.
Yes, yes,
those
yes.
Days with Fran Tate dressed up as a bunny.
Yes, yes. Your dad, Maury, and your mom, Flory, two of our favorite people in the world, two of the sweetest human beings. And we would talk to them every year on this date to celebrate the anniversary. And your dad would tell the story of being returning as a GI from World War II, marrying his high school sweetheart, your mom, Florence. And he had this idea to open up this hot dog place. And was
at that point, when he opened up the original Superdog, there was nothing else out there. And people were saying, you're going to do what? Where?
Yep. Hard to believe, isn't it, when you drive past this corner? I mean, I can't even take myself back in a time machine and picture how it must have looked in 1948. And I look out across the parking lot. There's apartment buildings. I look out across the Milwaukee Avenue. There's a big shopping center with a big supermarket. And can you imagine what those two young kids, they were 21 years old when they came here.
Oh, my gosh.
So crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
If somebody did that today, you'd go like, what?
Yeah.
You out of your mind? There was nothing. It was a ride out to the country in 1948.
And right now, it's not just a four-way intersection. It's about a six-way intersection, right?
Correct. Yes.
Correct. And still tonight at 1:12 in the morning, there's lots of cars driving around here right now.
Sure. But your dad, I remember him telling the story of he knew with O'Hare Airport being so close that there was going to be traffic, that it was going to work. He was convinced, right?
Absolutely, yes. With O'Hare and with the big park across the street, the woods, as they call them.
Yes, yes.
The forest, we call it the Forest Preserve, and the pool was already built. Wayland Pool was here. Wayland Pool was built in the 30s as a depression project, as a works project.
Mm-hmm.
So the pool existed and the park existed. And there was no air conditioning, very little air conditioning in 1948.
Sure.
So we were only open in the summers. We were open the summers of 48, 49, and 50. So people would get in the car, roll down the windows, or if they were lucky enough to have a convertible, take a ride to, as I say, the country. I'm laughing. It was the northwest edge of the city.
Right.
And get a little air and maybe go to the park and sit outside a little bit. And they stopped for a Super Dog, not a hot dog. You notice I didn't say a hot dog.
That's right.
They stopped for a Super Dog on their way. Or my mom used to tell the story of the kids who would get off the Milwaukee Avenue streetcar. There were no buses. on their way to the pool with their towel rolled up under their arm, get a Super Dutch and a bottle of pop. Sometimes they didn't have enough money, and my mom would say, that's okay, you'll catch us tomorrow.
Oh.
You need car fare to get home.
Lisa, you may be too young to remember this, but do you recall when Superdog started being open year-round?
I am too young to remember, but I know the history, so I can speak to the history. The summer of 1951, so summer of 48, summer of 49, summer of 50, we were only a summer business. Mm-hmm. Why are those years so important? Because my dad took the CPA exam. As it says on our menu, the owner was going through college. He was studying to become a CPA.
Mm-hmm.
He took the CPA exam in the spring of 50. My mom was already teaching school. She had already graduated from Northwestern. She was a school teacher. And he said to her, you don't work in the summer and I won't go to school. We'll do this make some money in the summer, and then I'll take the CPA exam. So he took the CPA exam in 50, which he passed. And my eldest brother, whose name is Scott, was born in 1950. We always say that's key to the story. And by then, I like to say Superdog had legs. They had already done this for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They knew the business was, people were coming, let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And they already had some trusted staff that they would send away in the winter. They didn't want to do that anymore. So they said, all right, let's do this. Let's make this our occupation. Let's make this our life. So the summer of 1951 was really when we began to be a year-round business.
And did it immediately become a car hop where you stay in your car and the food comes out to you?
Oh, it was like that from May 9th in 1948.
Really?
I'm telling my staff today, because we said happy anniversary to each other, happy birthday,
yeah.
Our current staff. We worked a drive-in restaurant from May of 48 through tonight, right now, because drive-ins were real popular in the country and even in Chicago. And so cars, after World War II, people could start to buy cars again. During the war years, they couldn't buy cars.
Right.
But gas was available, cars were available. So people started to buy cars, and people started to drive. So drive-ins became real popular, and the advent of that. The restaurant that we heard of with the Golden Arches hadn't arrived yet.
So that's people, true. Yeah.
People didn't know. People enjoyed, they still do, but it was a thing. We were a drive-in. Now, we had, it's interesting to think about, our cops, we were a summer business. They had no, as you can picture it, because I know you guys are customers and have been here, the car hops had no indoor place to stand. If it was wet or cold, they had to come in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So everything was a small building. Our original building, what they opened, was our kitchen. If anybody takes a ride here, you can see our original kitchen where we're making your Super Dogs and Super Cheesies and Whooper Cheesies was 20 by 12 in 1948, and it's still 20 by 12.
Wow. and the dogs, the Maury and Flory dogs on the top, they happened when?
They happened from day one. They were paper mache. They were the original structure, which is a metal armature underneath.
Yeah.
They were paper mache under that, on top of that. And this metal structure was underneath. And they would come down in the winter and then go back up again. I'm sorry, I've got some noisy kids on the other side here.
That's okay.
And over the years, as materials, as technology became better, they are now fiberglass. But two and a half years ago, we took them down for, as my husband Don likes to say, everybody gets to go to the spa every 25 years or so.
Yeah.
We took them down for their 25th yearly, for their 25th treatment, their 25-year treatment. And when we had them refurbished, we could look inside for the first time, for us. And we could see the metal armature inside, and we actually saw some pieces of paper mache still inside.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
But they're covered in fiberglass now, so they're much more weather resistant.
So even though they're covered in fiberglass now, it's the same basic structure that has been there since day one.
100%.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. It's the same, exact same structure. With Maury, the male figure, Maury, my dad.
With the muscles.
Winking with the muscles, strong Maury, winking adoringly at his girlfriend, his beau, Flory, with my mom. They were, as you said, they were high school sweethearts, and they went to prom together. We have their prom picture which to me just warms my heart. I love it that they were high school sweethearts, and I love it that they went to prom together.
Sweetest people in the world, I tell you. And I know I've told you this story before. I would always get tickled when we would get out of the car to go talk with your mom and dad, and Maury would come a beeline with his hands up to grab Steve by the cheeks, and he was going to kiss him, and your mother's going, Maury, don't! You've eaten a bun, Maury! Yeah. You'll make the boy sick!
Right, exactly. She came to my rescue every time.
She said, we're giving him some tamales. He'll be okay with that. He can't eat the super dog, but he loves the tamales, and I do love the tamales. Can you hang on for just a second? Because we're going to take a break and come back, and we want to say hi to your husband, Don. You guys worked so hard and so long, and it's Mother's Day and all that stuff, but we're making you sit down for just a few minutes, so we'll come right back with Lisa and Don from Superdog right here in Chicago on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We are commemorating the 78th, and it's hard for me to think, 78 years, 78th anniversary yes, Rabbit, of Superdog.
Right. We were talking with Lisa, Maury and Flory are the original owners, proprietors, the minds behind Superdog, and
the top dogs.
The top dogs, and it's been a family undertaking from day one for 78 years. Now we have on the line with us her husband, Don, and Don, we'd like to get you on the radio because it forces you to sit down for 5 minutes, right? Because you're so busy. Hi, Don. Hello?
So much for the break. Hello?
Hello there. Yes. Hey.
Yes. Hi.
So you're finally sitting down for a few minutes. How have things changed since you joined the family and you now have a second Superdog location?
Well, you know, not a whole lot has changed. In our Chicago location, since I've joined the family, we built a dining room. Actually last year we built an office, a small little office.
Yeah.
Because Lisa and I are here so much, we needed a place to be able to take a phone call. When we opened Wheeling, and it's hard to believe, it's already 16 years.
You're kidding.
Oh, my God.
2010. But we took, the same architecture and same style of service and everything, and just, we took a 1948 building and kind of built it, I like to say, a little bit on steroids,
mm-hmm.
in Wheeling.
Yep.
And because it's twice as big. It has, about 80 car spaces. It has a drive-through because we came into the 20th century. But the base of it is that we don't really change a whole lot because that's what's kind of kept us going for 78 years. We've always been a believer, Maury and Flo and Scott and Lisa and I. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's right.
Is the original Superdog still the most popular item on your menu?
Yes. I mean, that's our signature sandwich. That's our name. That's what we're known for, worldwide. Yes, it's made for us to our recipe. You can't get it anywhere else. It comes in the box with fresh cut, crinkle cut on all four sides, fries. We dress it the traditional Chicago style, mm-hmm. The golden mustard, the bright neon green relish,
mm-hmm.
the white onions, the kosher dill pickle, hot peppers if you like.
Sport
and I know,
peppers.
Johnny,
you
love our green pickled
tomatoes
because we don't have red tomatoes. That really is the base, and what we come to do every day the best way we know how.
Yep. As Maury used to say, from the bottom of our pure beef hearts.
Yep.
Thanks for stopping by. I remember that.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Bring your friends with you.
Now, the Wheeling location is also family run, right?
Yeah. My niece, Laura, Scott's daughter, mm-hmm. is our general manager there. So this way we have family in both places. So, it is same family, same concept. Same operation.
Both on Milwaukee Avenue for folks. If you've not been there.
Just to confuse people.
Yeah, right. If you've not been there, you should know that not too many years ago, Superdog was chosen as one of the places you should visit before you die.
Yep.
Right, Don?
Yeah, we're in the book, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die.
Yeah.
It's us and the Great Wall of China and, you know.
Right. The Grand Canyon, you know.
The pyramids.
Right.
And here you can just go to your backyard and knock out one of the 1,000 and only have about 999
right,
other ones to go
right.
to.
So the Chicago location is still 6363 North Milwaukee Avenue at that crazy intersection with Nagel and Milwaukee. And as Steve said, that six corners where you have to hold your breath when you're making the curve.
And Milwaukee, Dohan, and Nagel.
And the Wheeling location is 333 South Milwaukee?
Right, 333 South Milwaukee, even though it's north of right. the Chicago location. But it's on Milwaukee Avenue. Maury really likes Milwaukee Avenue.
Yeah.
And we share a lot line with Bob Chin's, mm-hmm. which is a world-class, restaurant as well.
Sure.
We're just south of Dundee.
That's right. And you will be open for Mother's Day. So do
Absolutely.
Your mother a favor and take her by there to get a super dog. And
absolutely. No mother likes to cook on Mother's
That's
Day.
That's right.
And so we're going to make Lisa work for her,
Aww.
For hers, and then we'll buy it. We'll buy her a super dog.
Right. Don, it's right. always.
Our kids and I are going to be here along with her, and, we're looking forward to spending the day together.
Well, thank you for spending some time with us. As I say, I never feel guilty because I feel like I'm forcing you guys to just catch your breath for 15, 20 minutes and talk with us because you're so busy. So what time will you open on Sunday?
We are open every day, 11 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and we're open until 1 in the morning every day. Fridays and Saturdays, we're open until 2 in the morning.
Okay, so you got another half hour to get over there and get you a super dog. Thank you, Don.
Yeah, we still have people at the front counter. Come on over.
All right. Hugs to you and Lisa. Thank you so much for joining
Happy
us.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. Good talking to you.
Good night.
Boy, Superdog defines a mom-and-pop business.
Unbelievable.
I mean, you want to talk about a family, really
yes.
family-run business.
And they've been so good to us over the years because for folks who've listened to us for a long time, they know of our relationship with Fran Tate from Barrow, Alaska. And Fran would come down here, dress as the Easter Bunny, go over to Children's Memorial Hospital and give out gifts that she purchased. We would just follow along behind her with a wagon full of stuffed animals that she would give away. And she developed a wonderful friendship with Maury and Flory from Superdog because owning a restaurant up in Barrow, she took some ideas that they had, and so they would share ideas running restaurants.
Well, they wound up sending some of the Superdog
boxes. Yeah.
And they used them up in Barrow, Alaska.
Right. And so it one thing became a possible event for our listeners to come out to, and next thing you know, it had blossomed into this big event at Superdog, and we had traffic backed up down Milwaukee and Devon and Nagel, just cars as far as you could see in the middle of the day waiting to come out and have a hot dog and meet Fran Tate and maybe
meet
us.
I realize how hungry I am for a hot dog right now.
I know. News is next here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I am 82 years old, going on 83.
Yes.
Why am I mentioning that, you may ask?
Because you are the exact same age as the man who was singing lead on that new song. You guys share a birthday. Your birthday
Mick
twins.
Mick Jagger and I, July 26th, 1943.
He's just got the skinny.
No, I don't move like Jagger.
No, and he's got the skinny rock and roll legs.
Yeah.
The real skinny legs.
Oh.
Now, that's brand new Stones music.
It is from a their new album.
Their 25th studio album.
And the album is going to be called Foreign Tongues.
Foreign Tongues, with some horrible, quote, artwork on the cover of the album. It looks like something from Mad Magazine, like a melting face.
Yeah, it really does.
Have you read where? Because it looks like Mick Jagger is this kind of all wax and his eyes are drooping. And it's not because he is of a certain age.
It's just.
It looks like Mad Magazine art.
I'm constantly impressed with Mick Jagger. In part because not only are they still making great music, but when you look at his physical history, I mean, this is a guy who, how many years ago was it that he went through some pretty major heart surgery?
Yeah.
And he just keeps himself in incredibly good condition.
That's all those young women he hangs with.
Yeah. And Keith Richards. There is a wonderful picture that I put up on my Facebook page, and I should share it on some of the other social media. It's a black and white picture. And it's Keith Richards, and he's leaning over this guitar, and he's showing Abraham Lincoln a few chords.
Yes!
And it's a great picture. Probably in a real-life picture, for all I know. They keep doing it, I don't know, there are some people who just don't like the Rolling Stones. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. You like them, you don't. I happen to love the Rolling Stones. One of the best concerts I ever saw back in the old amphitheater, the Rolling Stones, with Stevie Wonder as their opening act.
Oh, my gosh. Really, one of my regrets, and I don't have many regrets because I've been very fortunate, but one of my regrets was we never got my dad to a Stones concert. That's all he wanted. Yeah. Remember we were going to go to Indiana. We're going to take him to Indianapolis. Yep. Mm-hmm. And we told him that we were going, and one thing led to another, and we just weren't able to make the trip. Yeah. And he would have been over the moon.
I think one or more of us was sick at that point.
Yeah. It might have been him. And he said, I just can't make the trip there. And it was sitting on the lawn.
Yeah.
It was an outdoor concert, and you sat on the lawn. And anyway, they're going to be making the rounds again. You know it. And this 14 tracks, right? 12 or 14 tracks on this new 25th studio album. It's amazing.
And yes, we'll get it, of course.
Sure. Release date is in July.
Yeah.
Right. On the subject of music, young Jeff, you've got a concert coming up at the Salt Shed, right?
Yeah, my wife and I are going next Saturday, so I won't be here with you, unfortunately. But we are going to see a band called Yellow Card.
Yellow Card.
I know the name.
Yeah,
tell me more.
They're like an early aughts, like an alternative mm-hmm. punk emo kind of band. They have a violin lead singer. Violinist who plays electric violin was kind of their hook back then.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's a good sound. They're fun. They're kind of that like late 90s beach kind of vibe, but kind of more of a pop punk emo.
Now, am I confusing this one? Is the violin playing lead singer male or female? Because I'm thinking of one that is a female.
Yeah, this is male. I think you might be, I forget the name of the band. I know who you're talking about. There was a band that used to have a pop punk female.
Yeah, I think they were in town within the past 6 months, I believe.
Well,
I'm curious how you came across Yellow Card, because it's not like you're hearing them on the radio.
When I was in high school in the late 90s, they were just popped onto the scene.
Really?
And so I caught up them a couple times, and I was a violin player for 6 years, you know, from like fifth grade through freshman year of high school. So I was always like looking for that kind of thing.
It spoke to you.
Yeah, it touched me. So I was like, oh, this is really cool. I love that. So very good sound.
Well, they must have a big following to play the Salt Shed.
Yeah, they do. They've been pretty good my age, you know, older millennial, late and Gen Z kind of cross hybrid.
We haven't been to the Salt Shed, but it looks like a really interesting venue.
It is a cool venue. The acoustics are interesting because they literally just took that building.
Yeah.
Cement floors, nothing in the rafters.
For people who don't know, this was the old Morton Salt.
Yeah.
headquarters.
Yeah, and the venue itself inside, they have tons of bars, and there's cool little spaces, like a VIP space, but it's pretty much just a giant concrete floor.
Mm-hmm.
And in the back, they have a set of bleachers and seating stuff that you could probably fit 300 people in the seats,
mm-hmm,
or more, but the floor, I mean, it was a couple thousand. We were there for a concert last year.
Wasn't it Lisa went to the Salt Shed, and she had some pictures.
She was up in one of those booth areas. Yeah.
They also have like an outdoor area where they bring in food carts, and it's kind of a carnival-esque kind of
theme. Oh, that's fun.
And I think that's actually where this show is. It's going to be outdoors. It's part of that kind of venue feel. They're doing it's a circusy kind of thing. It's kind of cool.
Hmm. Interesting. So that's Yellow Card. That's next Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Just one night at the Salt Shed?
Just one night, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And a band named Good Charlotte is also playing with them.
Now,
I know them.
Yes.
Yeah, they were huge in the just before Yellow Card became popular in the mid-90s, for sure.
Well, I'm going to look into Yellow Card. Yeah. I love the idea of when you bring in a different kind of instrument,
mm-hmm,
and like we had Bob on tonight playing harmonica, and you think about, okay, well, do something that's not done, you know, mix it up a little bit. So violin certainly does that.
So you won't be with us next week, but you'll be back the following week.
Certainly.
But since you're a vegetarian, you won't miss the ribs that I'll be making for next week's show.
I will not. No.
How long have you been a vegetarian?
Since I was in eighth grade.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, since I have family histories of, you know, all those things that come with eating red meat and lots of it.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I also come from an Irish family, and so every piece of meat in my lifetime was cooked to medium well.
You're singing Steve's song.
Yep.
I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
So he says, oh man, I never knew when I was growing up that it could fill in the blanks, could taste so good, because it didn't taste good.
Exactly.
But now, did you get the potato gene?
I did, yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And as a vegetarian, what's better than just a potato?
Oh, I can
with a potato?
Lunch and dinner for me.
Really? Yes.
True story. My mom loved potatoes. We would take her out to dinner. She would have potato soup with a potato on the side.
And say to the waiter or waitress, will you please wrap a potato up so I can take it home? And she would not eat any. She would just have like a... So when she passed away...
Well, wait a minute.
Right.
Before that. So after we got married, Johnny was able to... Well, my brother Lee and I talked to Johnny and asked her to talk to my mom because she hadn't been to a doctor in years.
Mm-hmm.
So Johnny goes with my mom to the doctor.
Right. So she was concerned because it had been so many years. And she is sitting there, and the doctor has his back to us because he's on his computer screen, and he's asking her questions, and he's typing the answers, right? And he says, so what's your favorite food? And she said, potatoes. And he said, oh, and how often do you eat potatoes? And she said, well, whenever I can, every meal if I could. So, well, give me an idea. What's your breakfast like? And she said, coffee and toast. And he said, what's your lunch? And she said, coffee and potatoes. And what's your dinner? And she said, coffee and potatoes. And he said, okay. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of, you know, dismissive. When was the last time you were at the doctor? And she looked at me and said, how old is Steve? And at that point, Steve was 45.
She hadn't been to the doctor in 45 years.
Since
and she
was
in
born.
Great health.
Since he was born. The doctor spun around from his computer screen, scooted up right next to her, knees to knees, and said, tell me more.
And literally, it was potatoes, coffee, toast, tea.
Yeah.
Potatoes.
More coffee.
And she walked everywhere.
Yes, yes. And she would enjoy a slider every now and then.
Yeah.
You know, one with a cup of coffee. So when she passed away, Jeff, we actually had a ceramic potato
that was put
in her coffin.
In the coffin with her.
Because she was all about the love of the potato.
My wife is the same way. And so this summer, I turned our back deck into Potato Palooza.
I love it.
So many containers worth of potatoes. I'm hoping to have a harvest for days.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, you got to take a picture.
I'll bring a picture next weekend. Yeah.
Is she Irish too?
She's German, but you know. It's,
but you've rubbed off on her.
Yeah.
Oh
she,
my gosh.
You know, she's like you. She can't cook gluten, so potatoes are like her favorite thing. It's like that warm embrace.
And there really, we were talking earlier about that celiac disease is not specific to any nationality, any culture or whatever. But if you go to Ireland and you are gluten-free, we're told it's very easy to function there because so many Irish people are celiac. And I said, God knew what he was doing when he gave them the love of the potato because they can survive without being sick.
Oops.
Oh, no.
The lights are starting to flicker, and it's a...
I thought that was your stomach growling.
Well, there may be that, too. And that's a big plug Bob on his Zamboni, signaling that it is time for us to pitch for the last call. If you would like to be our last caller and win some goodies, 312-981-7200. That number, again, is 312-981-7200. And you don't have to have anything pithy to say, although you could.
You could, yes. You can talk about Mother's Day. You could talk about your love of potatoes. You could talk about what you're having for your snack. Are you going to go to brunch today for Mother's Day? Are you one of the bazillions of people that are going to be doing that?
Oops, he's getting too close.
I know. He's going to run over your feet if you're not careful.
So 312-981-7200. And as long as you haven't won anything from this here radio place in the last 2 months or 60 days, whichever comes first, you could win some goodies from our prize closet. So we'll take a break and get back with our last caller on WGN.
Oh, boy, is it.
Losing time. Yep. Yeah, yes, you really kind of do.
Nope.
Can't stop. That is our friend Red Peters. And as we say every week, because it's true, if we ever play all of that song, the unedited all of that song, it will be our last show, not only on this radio station, but maybe on any radio station.
That's right.
But if you would like to hear all of the closing song, just go to YouTube and look up the closing song by Red Peters, and you will see why we are not going to play it. We should mention next week, full show next week, and Tom Appel will be joining us. We'll talk about all things cars. And we have another one of your gluten-free recipes.
We do, yes. And don't forget, because I mentioned it in the 10 o'clock hour tonight, I did our gluten-free recipe for this week, and it's actually an entire meal. So if you're interested in a meal that you could make for family or friends, it's 100% gluten-free, but it doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. It's just not anything big. It's not difficult to do, and it's ribs, and I know...
Yeah, I'm so hungry for
ribs. Yeah, coleslaw right now. And French fries. Boy. And
and the recipe will be on our blog, which is stevenjohnny.wordpress.com. And, yes, we would love you to subscribe to that. No fee. We don't spam you. We don't sell your information. You just get an email anytime we have a new blog post. And that's stevenjohnny.wordpress.com. So Johnny's ribs recipe will be up there. And within the next 48 hours, Patrick's show notes, and over the next couple of days, some new videos from the River Road Trio when they were in studio with us. So lots of things coming up on our blog over the next couple of days.
So sign up because you'll get all that good stuff first. Eventually, it will make its way over to Facebook, but it's so much better because you get lots of pictures and stuff like that.
Yeah. So... this is the this is our second show for the month, so and it's been a while since I picked the caller, so I'm going to say
okay.
Line 2, and line 2 is Drew, which rhymes with 2. Drew, you're on WGN. Where are you calling from?
Calling from Oriole Park on the west side of Chicago.
All right. How are you doing tonight?
All right. Just to listen to you guys. I'm a little too far from the hazard area over there. I'm walking the van.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Yeah. It was good to hear Don talk. Yeah, I know Don for years since I was a kid.
Really? So, I've never got his history. So, I guess he's born and raised in Chicago as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it make you hungry for a hot dog? Because I'm dying right now.
Yeah, it's about me too.
I know. I was talking and I realized my mouth was watering. It's making me crazy. So, well, what do you got planned for Sunday?
Well, we just had a little get together with my brothers and remember my.
Well, good. Remember good. Mom. I know a lot good. Of folks will be going out to cemeteries to remember their moms and grandmas. Sure. And a listener asked me if I was going to do that, and I said, no, my mom is on my mantle, so.
Yeah, that's true.
I can visit her right there in the living room.
What's the...
There you go.
Is there one piece of advice that your mom gave you that you remember?
Treat people how you want to be treated.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
A version of the golden rule. Yeah.
Yep.
Are you normally up at this hour of the morning?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What do you like to do when you're not hanging out with us in the middle of the night?
Well, I've been sick for a while, and I'm finally healing well now.
Oh, good.
I had a severe infection, yeah.
Oh.
So I'm getting better, yeah.
Good, good.
Good.
Well, I'm glad that we could be here and you can hang out with us on Saturday night. And we are going to send you an official WGN radio t-shirt. So wear it in good health and continue to feel better. And hang on, and Jeff will get some info from you off the air, and we'll get that in the mail to you.
This night has gone by so fast.
I think I want to squeeze in. We did not get our shout-outs, and I'm sorry about that. But because
Shout. Okay, there's the jingle.
As I said at the top of the show, I was having problems with my phone, and I learned tonight this is a classic case of I rely too much. I have too much valuable information on this stupid phone. It's listening to me now, so you know what's going to happen. It's going to break because it's angry. Because I got it working again, but it was by that time it was too late for me to go back in and do the shout-outs.
And just to give you an example, Johnny sent me the pictures. And if you go to our Facebook page, you'll see pictures of our drive-in. There are only, I don't know, maybe 10 pictures up there. Johnny's phone sent 38 pictures to my phone.
And I kept telling you during breaks, you said, I've got 38 pictures. I go, I didn't send you 38 pictures. And that's why the phone was just acting up, and I was so frustrated. It was minutes before we went on the air, and I realized I can't post the pictures. I can't read the shout-outs. So, sorry, things will be better next week, or else I'll have a new phone. That's my way of saying, so take that phone if you're listening.
Well, how long have you had this phone?
A year.
Because this is the... No, it's been...
It's the 24. You're right. So it would be 2 years. Yeah.
I just realized there's one other thing we forgot to mention. And fortunately, we have a little bit of time to mention it. Our friends, the Empty Pockets.
Oh, yes.
Next Saturday.
Yes.
You want to go to Blue Island, to the Lyric Theater in Blue Island.
Yes.
The Empty Pockets will be performing there, and they're going to be doing all of the songs from their new album.
And that's a great venue, too, the Lyric Theater. It's on Western Avenue, like 120-something on Western Avenue.
I think I have the address here.
I thought it was Beverly, but they call it Blue Island.
It's 12952 Western Avenue in Blue Island.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't that sound like Beverly? Because isn't Beverly Records at 116th in Southwestern Avenue?
Yeah, but this is farther south, so it is technically, I think it's Blue Island.
Yeah.
So it's 7:30 p.m., the Lyric Theater, Blue Island, Empty Pockets, and it's going to be a great show. I mean, you know, we love the Empty Pockets.
Yeah,
but
and
they're going to, along with some of their classic songs, they're going to be doing all of the songs from their new album. This is going to be a really, really, really good concert.
And the next chance you'll get to see them will be July 9th when they do their benefit concert for Will's Place, and that will be up in Skokie.
At the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts.
Yeah, if you've had any thought of seeing the Empty Pockets, next Saturday is the night to do that at the Lyric Theater in Blue Island. Okay, a listener says, if I go to Superdog, which I'll do tomorrow... You said that is a busy intersection. Yeah, we didn't mean to scare you off. It's a
crazy intersection. Yes. I'm sorry, it's a crazy intersection.
It's Devon, Nagel, Milwaukee. It's just everything is happening there. Yes.
It is one of the many crazy intersections in Chicago. I still say the craziest intersection is the one that I grew up with. Stony Island, yeah. 79th Street, South Chicago Avenue.
I agree.
That is, and the you're merging onto the Skyway. Yeah. I mean, that is bonkers.
Yes.
And that's the good news.
And on that happy note, yeah. We'll say, have a wonderful Mother's Day, however you choose to celebrate it.
Thank you to Bob and to Ron and to Jeff and to you for hanging out with us. And
yeah.
We'll talk to you next week.